Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope. Episode 1. 5 years have passed since I gave up the wardenship of Hiram's Hospital. It was hard, so very hard, to leave that place and to bid farewell to the old men there. But I was right to leave, I'm certain, and I was not unhappy, not for some while. I continued as choirmaster at the cathedral and took delight in doing so. Took delight as well in my daughter Eleanor's marriage to Mr. John Bold. He was a good man, a worthy man. But John Bold is dead. And his death has been a double grief to me, because he was my friend, and because his death so grieved my daughter. And it is, I fear, not to be the end of my sorrows.
Well, Sir Lander. Well, Sir Omicron.
Well, Dr. Grantlier.
Well, Dr. Grantlier.
I think...
We think...
that it is quite beyond the realms of possibility that your father should live for another week.
You think so?
A week is the very most that one can hope for.
But, gentlemen, a week ago you came here and said that there wasn't the remotest chance of him enduring till today.
We believed it was...
unlikely.
A week before that, similarly, 7 days was all that could be envisaged.
That is true. But you see, Archdeacon, we assess the patient's body.
We cannot always anticipate the tenacity of the human spirit.
Indeed. Only... you must understand, it is so very painful for me.
Of course.
Of course.
To watch my dear father fighting this grim battle. To be advised that he will gain blessed release and then to find...
Of course.
Be assured, Dr. Grantlier, your father will not see out another week.
That's certain.
Quite certain.
Quite certain.
Amidst our distress, there has inevitably been some talk of the succession. My understanding of these things is limited, but I gather that there is a very strong chance that the bishopric will pass from father to son. I am certain that Dr. Grantlier is eminently suited to the episcopal throne of Barchester. He has, to all intents and purposes, been sat on it himself for a good long time. And I gather that Dr. Grantlier is a close friend of the master of one of the Oxford colleges, Lazarus it is, I believe, and that the master of this college is a friend, perhaps even a close friend, of the Prime Minister. But whether that is of much significance, I don't know. Perhaps not, given the present plight of the government.
Just one more thing, gentlemen, before you go. Any... news from London?
Concerning the ministry, you mean?
Yes.
Well, we have public news.
The ministry will survive.
Ah.
And we have private information. It will fall within 5 days.
Oh. I think... 5 days. I think... Of course, they could be as mistaken about the life expectancy of the government as they have been about that of my father.
I think it must be...
But what if it came to pass? What if, say, the Prime Minister was out of office or on his way out, and my father was still living?
I think it must be an appropriate hour for a glass of wine.
What?
Wine.
Yes, very well. Perhaps if he were to pass on within a week of the government passing on, not all would be lost. It might take as long as a week before a new cabinet were formed, and in that case, the outgoing Prime Minister surely would continue to make episcopal and other appointments. Wouldn't he?
My lord...
Thank you, Archdeacon. One thing I do know. If the ministry does fall with me not yet appointed bishop, a second chance won't come my way. Oh, my Lord Bishop, why? Why could you not... since you must, in any event, very soon, why, therefore, could it not be now? Today? Oh, my Lord Bishop, I want the appointment so very, very much. Do you not think I deserve it? Could you not oblige me? Could you...
No. No, 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 no. That was very wrong of me. Very wrong indeed. Oh.
Almighty God, I kneel before you and beseech your forgiveness. I have sinned. I have entertained iniquitous thoughts, perverted thoughts. I repent myself of them. Oh, Lord, forgive me. Forgive me.
Oh, it's you, Harding.
I have disturbed you at your prayers. I am so sorry.
No, no, that's quite all right. Come in, Harding, come in.
Your father is asleep?
Yes, I think so.
This must be such a very great trial for you.
Oh, Harding.
Dear Archdeacon. Harding. Harding, is that you?
Yes, Bishop.
God bless you, Harding. God bless you both, my dear, dear children.
I believe it is all over.
Yes, he is gone.
Oh, that our last moments may be as innocent and peaceful as his. He was a fine, dear old man.
Yes.
You cannot but be relieved that it is finished.
Indeed.
We have all waited so long.
Come, Harding. Quickly, into the other room.
Why? What is it, Archdeacon?
Quickly, quickly, there must be no delay.
The Bishop of Barchester is dead. There, that says it all, I think.
Yes.
If you would be good enough to take it to the telegraph office at the station.
Of course.
Oh, a message sent by the Reverend Septimus Harding.
Why have you put my name to the message, Archdeacon?
Harding, it must come from someone, and what name so proper as that of an old friend of the bishop?
Ah, right.
And pray don't waste any time.
No. Very well. Oh, I've just remembered.
Remembered what, Harding?
I had intended to give you some news, but then...
What news?
Chadwick asked me to pass it on to you.
Yes?
It came by electric telegraph.
Well?
The ministry are out. I know only a little about the new Bishop of Barchester. I have heard it said that Dr. Proudie inclines more to the low church than to the high, but that he is generally of a tolerating disposition. I trust, anyway, that there will be no obstacle to my being on reasonably good terms with him.
Morning.
Morning, Archdeacon.
Not been waiting long, I hope.
Not at all. Very good of you to accompany me.
No, no, we must both make ourselves known to the new... to Dr. Proudie. So we may as well do it together and share the ordeal.
Ordeal? It will not be that, surely.
Oh, it will, Harding, believe me. Were you aware that the man was a member of the interdenominational conference that included in its number the Presbyterian Synod of Ulster?
No.
Were you aware that he was honorary secretary to the Commission of Inquiry into the Revenues of Cathedral Chapters?
No.
Mind you, he is not the real enemy. I gather that in pretty well all things, he is governed by his wife.
Oh, indeed.
And to avoid the risk of exercising any of his own judgment at all, he has now appointed his own chaplain. Or rather, his wife has.
You must be Dr. Grantley.
I am Dr. Grantley.
Come in, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Proudie and Mrs. Proudie will be here very soon. My name is Obadiah Slope, and I am the bishop's domestic chaplain.
I supposed you might be.
The room, Harding,
yes,
has acquired a new sofa, a chintz sofa.
I have heard much about your splendid work, Dr. Grantly. You are resident at Plumstead Episcopi, I believe.
I am. And the curtains have been changed.
How very fortunate the Plumstead residents must count themselves to have your good self among them.
Perhaps, though I like to think that my influence is also felt beyond the perimeters of Plumstead.
Yes, I'm sure you do. Forgive me, your colleague's name is not known to me.
Harding.
Pleased to meet you.
Mr. Harding is choirmaster at the cathedral and former warden of Hiram's Hospital.
Yes. Hiram's Hospital. A curious business, that. The gentleman who first raised questions about the hospital's finances,
Mr. Bold.
He was a close acquaintance of yours, I think.
He was, and became a relative, too. He married my younger daughter.
What sudden changes life thrusts upon us. I am a mother now, and I am a widow too. Oh, John, you were the most perfect treasure with which a woman could be endowed. You were all in all to me, and you are gone. Sweet dearest boy, with your plump legs and fat little fists, sweet little John Bold, you are all in all to me now.
Bishop is obliged to return to London next week in connection with his work for the Manufacturing Towns Morning and Evening Sunday School Society.
Indeed, Mrs. Proudie.
Yes, I am honoured to be the Society's director.
President.
President, yes, thank you.
Talking of Sabbath day schools, Dr. Grantly, are the arrangements for them generally pretty good in your archdeaconry?
Sabbath day schools, Mr. Slope? There are no arrangements. Yeah. Depends mainly upon each parson's wife and daughters. We've no such school at Plumstead, I can tell you that much.
Well, that's not strictly true, Archdeacon. Mrs. Grantly, she is my elder daughter, you know. She runs a very fine...
No, Harding. That is simply a school which she happens to run on a Sunday. But it is not a Sunday school at all.
I see. By the by, I have a copy of Bradshaw here, and it tells me that there are 3 trains into Barchester on the Sabbath and 3 trains out. Do you not think, Dr. Grantly, that something should be done to induce the railway company to diminish this evil?
I don't know. Perhaps if you can withdraw the passengers, then the company will withdraw the trains. It's a question of dividends.
No, surely. It is very much more than that. Surely it is a question of the eradication of sinfulness.
Well, as you wish. Dr. Proudie...
Do you not agree, Mr. Harding?
Yes. I trust, Dr. Proudie, that the palace repairs have been effected to your satisfaction.
Repairs? Yes. On the whole, I rather think so, yes. Certainly no real ground for complaint.
There is one point, Mr. Archdeacon, since you have raised the issue of necessary improvements. The stalls in the second stable, they're quite insufficient. So many of the bishop's relatives bring their own horses, you see.
Also, Dr. Grantly, we are not satisfied with the arrangement in the palace regarding gas and hot water.
Gas?
Oh, there must be pipes for gas and hot water throughout the entire building. Now, must there not, my lord?
No, certainly gas, hot water, essential.
Now, Mr. Harding, you were about to offer your opinion concerning Sabbath
travelling.
Ah. Yes.
I have also found, Dr. Grantly, that the coping on the garden wall is in places imperfect.
Well, Mrs. Proudie, I was simply going to say that I hope all those who work for the railways have the opportunity of going to church if they wish to.
Oh, but surely, surely, Mr. Harding, our duties with regard to the Sabbath ask much more of us than that. No manner of work, neither thou nor thy manservant nor thy maid.
Also, there is a large hole, Dr. Grantly, in the servants' quarters caused by a rat.
We must not have rats.
We detest rats. Surely, surely, Mr. Harding.
Also, Dr. Grantly, the locks on some of the outhouses are very imperfect.
As are those on the doors of the servants' rooms. Also,
Mr. Slope. You must understand that I inquired about the condition of the building simply as a point of politeness and compliment. Please refer your list of items to the diocesan architect. Harding.
Yes, Archdeacon.
I think it is time for us to offer our goodbyes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Good heavens! Good heavens! I don't think I shall ever much like that Mrs. Proudie.
Like her?
Oh. Like her? She is a hell hag. Nor, I'm afraid, do I care greatly for Mr. Slope.
An abomination, Harding, an utter abomination.
Sabbath day school, Sabbath travelling. But the bishop seems, well, a quiet enough fellow.
The bishop is an idiot, a puppet. I'll not talk about him. He's beneath contempt.
So what are we to do about Slope, then?
Do, Archdeacon?
How are we to get rid of the bestial, impudent, canting, low-bred Slope?
Well, in truth, Archdeacon, I rather thought Mrs. Proudie was the worst of the two.
Harding, if a woman is detestable, one simply keeps out of her way.
But I am not at all inclined to put up with Mr. Slope. It is men like him, you know, who will be the ruin of the Church of England.
Oh.
My text this morning is from the second epistle of Paul the Apostle to Timothy.
The choir acquitted themselves very well, I think.
Chapter 2, verse 15. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth.
The extra practice I gave will have helped a little.
It's my very rare privilege to be giving this sermon today on the first Sunday after my Lord the Bishop's consecration.
And I suppose we were all to some degree encouraged by the sense of occasion.
It is, I know, with the Bishop's firm endorsement that I now address you.
I do wish,
these
though,
thoughts I am about to give you are his thoughts. These are his weighty opinions.
I do wish that Mr. Slope were not giving the sermon today.
I make no apology for choosing St. Paul's words as my text, nor do I apologize for addressing my remarks first and in particular to those who have been entrusted with the task of directing the spiritual progress of the people of Barchester. For if the shepherds are led astray, what hope is there for the flock?
Oh, dear. Is this, I wonder, to be an attack on Dr. Grantly?
If the mode of worship be not decent and moderate and without excess of feeling, then into what perversions will our church descend?
An attack on me too, perhaps.
Outward ceremonies belong to a barbarous past, to a time when churchmen supposed that they must present a show in order to capture the simple minds of the people. But now, the Christian has a reason for his faith. He believes because he understands. Why, in this age, need we deck out the words of our Lord with mummery and music?
Yes, decidedly an attack on me.
It is all too easy to be won over by melody, to be uplifted by the vocal soaring of a cathedral choir. But must we let music's meretricious charms obstruct our ears to the simple beauty of the Book of Truth?
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Harding,
It is war.
Is it, Archdeacon?
Mr. Slope must not be allowed to preach again in this cathedral. He has purposely insulted those of us in the diocese who have for years performed our religious duties without schism and with good repute, yourself included.
Yes, that is...
Good heavens, Harding, he has mounted a most vicious and nasty attack upon you and your position and your work.
Yes, yes, he has. And perhaps... there is some substance to his criticism.
Oh, really?
So perhaps my life is about to be revealed a second time to be a useless sham.
Now listen, warden.
No, no, Dr. Grantley, I am no longer warden, and perhaps I should no longer be the cathedral's choirmaster.
That is madness. Good heavens, will you lie down and submit before the fight is commenced? Will Slope walk triumphant over the field? I tell you this, Harding... if Slope is for the abolition of all ritual, then I will propose that our ceremonies be multiplied 100 times over. There will be chanting and intoning, and then more chanting and intoning. A most toxic incense will be burnt. Genuflections and prostrations will be repeatedly performed, and vestments of the most violent colors will be worn. I shall do all I can, Harding, short of kissing the Pope's foot, to take the fight to Mr. Slope and to drive him from the precincts of our beloved cathedral.
I am so grateful to you for permitting me this visit.
Do take a seat, Mr. Slope.
I felt I ought to make your acquaintance at an early opportunity, but now that I'm here, I am certain that the occasion will be less a duty than a pleasure.
You are very kind.
It's the most charming baby you have, Mrs. Bull.
Oh, yes. Not least when he is asleep.
His features bear a strong likeness to yours.
You think so?
Oh, most certainly. A charming boy. Mrs. Bull, I hope that you will not think the subject too serious for drawing-room conversation, but... regarding the sermon that I gave last Sunday...
Yes, Mr. Slope.
I rather fear that it may have been ill-judged. It was certainly misunderstood.
Was it, Mr. Slope?
No, it was. I much regretted, Mrs. Bold. Regret most particularly that my words offended the feelings of a man of whom I cannot speak too highly. I mean, of course, your father. Dear lady... I have, I assure you, the highest admiration for Mr. Harding. What I said in the sermon was in no way intended to disparage him. I am deeply sorry that he has been hurt by my remarks, and that you, on his account, have suffered too. I trust your stay in town was a pleasant one, my lord?
Yes, very agreeable. Though it was unfortunate that I had to leave in such a... so soon after that very memorable service, Mr. Slope. I gather that it excited quite vigorous discussion within the diocese.
I would hope so, my lord. And also I hope it provoked some very earnest searching of souls and pondering of minds... I did not go up into the pulpit to proclaim that all was right and well, that errors had not been perpetrated.
No, I don't suppose that you did, Mr. Slope.
My lord, talking of errors, I wonder if I may bring up the name of Dr. Vesey Stanhope.
Yes, certainly. Who is Dr. Vesey Stanhope? Is he a member of the diocese?
Yes, strictly speaking. He is at present your canon in residence, strictly speaking. While you were in town, my lord, I took the trouble to write to him at his villa on Lake Como, where he has been residing for a period not short of 12 years.
Lake Como, did you say?
Italy, my lord.
Yes, Mr. Slope, but if he is at present my canon in residence, why...
Why has he been residing at Lake Como?
Precisely.
The reason that was given for his going there, my lord, was that he wished to find a cure for his sore throat.
Sore throat?
Your predecessor was grievously lax, I fear.
permitted all sorts of slackness and irregularity. But things are different now. Things are very different, are they not, my lord?
Yes. Oh, yes. Certainly.
I advised Dr. Stanhope as much in my letter, informed him that there was no room now for waste and idleness, and that since we do not look favourably upon absent members of our clergy, we would feel obliged, if Dr. Stanhope persisted in neglecting his diocesan duties, to ensure that appropriate disciplinary steps were taken against him.
Disciplinary steps, yes, quite right. Has Dr. Stanhope responded at all?
He has, and with dispatch. It will not be too long, so I understand, before your canon in residence is truly in residence again.
Good, yes. Good.
It's possible that he might even have returned to Barchester by the time of Mrs. Proudie's grand party. Perhaps he and his family should be added to the list of invitations.
I would have much preferred it, Mr. Slope, if there had been no eating or drinking tonight. There's nothing quite so vulgar as eating and drinking, in my opinion.
Oh, Mrs. Proudie, I fear that it is rather expected of a bishop and his wife that they should at least provide the opportunity for light refreshments on an occasion such as this. But, as you requested, no chairs or tables have been put out.
What is the arrangement about wine?
I have purchased a satisfactory enough Marsala at 20 shillings a dozen. Mm-hmm. As for those very few guests for whom the Marsala would not be satisfactory enough... not there, please. My lord.
Excuse me, Mrs. Proudie. You are not to sit on the sofa, my lord.
Not? No, if you please.
But there are no chairs. There is nowhere else that I can sit.
That is true, my lord, but you cannot sit there. Mm-hmm. That sofa is to be kept for a lady.
A lady? Do you mean a particular lady, Mr. Slope?
Yes, my lord. La Signora Madeline Visi Neroni.
La Signora who?
There's Dr. Grantley. Good evening.
Good evening to you.
You are in good health, I hope.
Oh, yes, Mr. Slope. I try not to let anything interfere with my health.
Mr. Slope, I don't believe you've met Dr. Stanhope.
Good evening.
Dr. Stanhope. Very pleased. We know each other a little, do we not, through our correspondence?
Yes, indeed we do.
How was Italy?
Italy, Mr. Slope, was very well.
And how is your sore throat?
My sore throat? Ah, yes. That is not so very well.
You brought your family with you, did you, when you returned to England?
Sadly, I did.
There is one son, I recall.
And two daughters.
Indeed. I trust Signora Neroni is still intending to be here tonight.
Oh, yes. They'll all be here.
Ah, is this Signora Neroni's carriage by any chance?
It is. And Charlotte?
Ah, Signora Neroni.
Signora Neroni?
Not I, sir. I am Signora Neroni.
Oh, Signora Neroni. My name is Slope.
Of course it is.
I am the bishop's resident chaplain, and I am delighted to make your acquaintance.
How kind. Mr. Slope, this is my sister, Charlotte. Pleased to meet you, Mr. Slope. And the gentleman there is my brother, Bertie.
Hello.
Good evening.
I received your exceedingly pretty note, Signora Neroni.
So glad.
And I am pleased to inform you that, in accordance with your request, a sofa has been specially designated for your sole and exclusive use.
I'm very, very grateful. I should, however, advise you, Mr. Slope, that though I am so wretched a thing as to require a sofa, I am not so selfish as to require it all. But it is, of course, only men who can sit next to me. Ladies' crinolines are so bulky.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. I was extremely sorry to hear of your unfortunate accident, Signora Neroni.
Well, it was more than 6 years ago, Mr. Slope, so I am beginning to become accustomed to it.
Might I ask the Signora...
My sister severely damaged the sinews of her knee while ascending a ruin in the Forum Romanum, and it appeared as a result that she was immobilized.
Oh, how very distressing.
Yes, not least for those who have to carry her. Straight on here.
Yes. This way.
You are right, madam.
There is the sofa, Signora.
You are most kind.
Excuse me, what I say.
Signora Vinci Neroni?
The bishop, Signora.
Enchanted.
Are you perfectly comfortable, Signora?
Perfectly.
he has spoken with you tonight?
Well, yes, Papa, he has, but I meant last Tuesday, Papa, when he came to see me.
Mr. Slope came to see you, my dear. For what purpose?
It was merely a social visit, I suppose. He had very kind words to say about you, Papa.
Oh, did he?
He holds you in the highest regard, not least in respect of your musical talents. Papa, I know that Mr. Slope is not thoroughly liked in Barchester, but I sincerely believe that his character has been mistaken. The sermon he gave...
Yes?
He intended no personal disrespect by it.
Well, I'm not certain, but I fear he intended disrespect to the Church of England.
But perhaps he thought it his duty, Papa.
I do not see that politeness should be excluded from religion when we expect it in other areas of life.
No, Papa.
But this is intended to be a pleasant occasion, and I do not wish to talk about the matter further. Let me tell you instead about the hospital.
The hospital, Papa?
I have been informed that the position of warden is to be offered once more.
Papa?
Not at £800, at £450. That is the figure decided upon by this new Act of Parliament, which has also, I am pleased to say, increased the allowance to be given to the beadsmen. Oh, and there are to be beads women, too.
Women?
But I would be responsible for the old men only, if I am given the job, that is.
And will you be, Papa?
Well, it seems quite likely. It's the bishop's appointment, but Dr. Grantly is of the opinion that, given the manner of my resigning, and given the new basis upon which the hospital is to be settled, Dr. Proudie would have little choice but to offer the position to me.
And you would take it, would you not, Papa?
Oh, yes, Eleanor. Yes, I shall accept the post if it is offered, but I shall not seek it. I shall not ask it as a favor from the bishop.
No, Papa.
Particularly if the granting of such a favor is a matter to be settled by Mr. Slope.
The Bishop of Barchester, I believe. I fear my sister has put you all to a great deal of trouble.
Your sister...
Disrupting the proceedings, monopolizing the furniture.
Oh, your sister. No, not a bit. We're delighted to have the Signora Vicinerone with us. And your good self, too, Signora.
Thank you. I believe you've not been in Barchester long?
No, not very long.
Is there that much to do here?
Oh, indeed. Yes, the work of a bishop, you know, carries great responsibility.
Really? I asked because I once thought of being a bishop myself.
Did you?
I became a Jew, though, instead. Oh. My father might have been a bishop if he'd stuck at it. But I suppose he didn't like saying the same things over and over. Have you met my father?
No, I...
He's here somewhere. Tends to hide when my sister does her impersonation of the Queen of Sheba.
Perhaps I shall come upon him. And I suppose, if you'll forgive me, Signora, that I really ought to be circulating.
Oh, that's all right. We'll circulate together.
Oh.
My lord?
Yes, my dear.
Did you tell Mr. Slope that I wished to see him?
Yes, my dear.
Then why did he not do so? Mr. Slope, it seems, is in dereliction of his duties.
Oh.
Ah, Signora Neroni, I believe.
You are correct.
I'm so very pleased that you're able to, despite your impediment, to be with us tonight.
Well, I'm pleased too.
And my lord, the bishop and I are very keen to make...
Oh, would you excuse me,
Mrs. Proud? Mrs. Slope, at last.
A sweet sherry for your good self, Signora.
How very kind.
Mr. Slope.
Your good health, Mr. Slope.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Slope.
Mrs. Proudie.
With no disrespect to Signora Neroni, there are very many guests present tonight who would expect to have the chance to converse with the bishop's domestic chaplain.
Yes, Mrs. Proudie, I suppose there are.
Oh, keen as one is to circulate, it's infernally slow work.
You will therefore have the goodness, Mr. Slope.
No, of course, the sofa doesn't help. It's in the worst place possible.
You will have the goodness.
Bertie, what are you doing?
Mrs. Proudie, I think it might be proved.
Hold on tight, Bertie.
If you moved away from the sofa.
What?
I'm going to give you a little ride.
No. Stop! Matthew!
his car! Oh, my dress!
Mrs. Stanna,
my dress!
Oh, dear.
Idiot, Bertie.
Oh, forgive me, Mrs. Proudie. Forgive me, please. I'll do anything I can to get the damage repaired. I'll fly to the rooms of the fairies if necessary.
Unhand my dress, sir.
Please, madam, allow me to.
Unhand it, sir.
I'm trying to disentangle you.
What a disaster.
Madam! Madam!
Yes? Madam? Bertie, I think you should get up now.
Fixed it. Well, unfixed it.
My dear, are you all right?
No, Mrs. Proudie, this is so very...
Yes, Mr. Slope?
Very unfortunate.
Yes, Mr. Slope.
May I...
No, you may not, Mr. Slope. I will return shortly.
You must understand, my lord, that it was solely for the pleasure of meeting you that I have had myself dragged here tonight.
Oh, really?
In fact, it was my one consolation in coming to England at all.
I am most deeply, deeply obliged, Signora Vicinerone.
My lord, might I crave of you a great favour? I have a daughter, just 7 years old, who is all in all to me. Will you visit her, my lord? Will you lay your holy hands upon her innocent head and consecrate her for female virtues? Will you, my lord?
If she's only 7, Signora, then she is much too young to be confirmed.
Then will you at least talk to her? Will you teach her to lisp the holy catechism?
Well, I'll be very happy to drop by sometime and have a word with her. Where should I call?
Why, at Papa's house, of course.
Mr. Slope?
Yes, my lord.
Do you know who is the father of Signora Vicinerone?
You mean Vizi Neroni, my lord.
Vizi?
Her father is Dr. Vizi Stanhope.
Dr. Stanhope? Oh, I see. I suppose, therefore, that the fellow who caused all the upset with the sofa...
Dr. Stanhope is his father, too.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Slope.
My lord.
So, a madman accosts me, a lady pleads with me to save her daughter from sin, and it transpires they are both of the family of my own canon in residence. I have a good mind to be angry.
Are you an enthusiast of Sabbath day schools, Signora?
Oh, I am, Mr. Slope, most decidedly. In my opinion...
Mr. Slope!
In my opinion, nothing is more important in this world than that tiny, ignorant mind should receive enlightenment.
Mr. Slope!
Mrs. Proudie?
Mr. Slope, you are making yourself neither very sociable nor very useful this evening.
Forgive me, Mrs. Proudie, but I think Mr. Slope has been eminently sociable. As for usefulness, he has already brought me a drink or two.
And as soon as the Signora has finally decided upon her supper, I shall...
No!
No, Mrs. Proudie?
No. You will not take this lady her supper. You will not wait upon her. I cannot permit you to be so employed.
Then must I go without?
Oh, of course you must not, Signora. The Signora cannot go without her supper, Mrs. Proudie.
Well, if I am not to go without, I have decided I shall have some chicken, please, and a little ham.
Certainly, Signora.
That's so kind of you.
Not at all.
Mr. Slope! Mr. Slope, you shall not fetch that woman her supper.
Dear me, I wonder if she's always like this.
Oh, yes, madam. Always. I am always the enemy of impropriety and insolence. Mr. Slope! You shall not do this, Mr. Slope. You shall not flout my wishes.
She is lame, Mrs. Proudie. She cannot move.
Oh, I'd make her move if she was anything to do with me. She is a painted Jezebel, Mr. Slope. And I am exceedingly surprised and disappointed that you should wish to do favors for her. Anyone would suppose, Mr. Slope, that you had become her lover.
Her lover? Good gracious, my dear madam. She's a married woman.
Well, that's more than I know. Though she may choose to pass as such. I am better acquainted with the feminine gender than you are, Mr. Slope, and you may believe me when I inform you that whatever her status may be, the Signora, as she likes to call herself, is not a fitting companion for a strict evangelical unmarried clergyman. Your attentions towards her are improper, Mr. Slope, and you are thereby giving offence in my drawing room. Do you understand?
I understand very well, Mrs. Proudie.
I am pleased to hear it.
But the lady must have her supper somehow, must she not?
Mr. Slope!
Will you excuse me, Mrs. Proudie? I spoke with the bishop at the party. I told him that I would take the wardenship if it were offered. So this morning, you see, I must discuss the matter further with Mr. Slope. In the note he sent me, Slope called himself my assured friend. I wonder how many assured friends I have in this world. Very few, I imagine. And I very much doubt whether Mr. Slope can truly be counted among their number. What does he think has passed between the two of us to allow him to claim this relationship with me? A quarter to ten. An assured friend, having called me to his room at an early hour, would at least do me the courtesy of being punctual. This room has changed. Everything has changed here. Just a few months ago, I regarded the bishop's palace as a second home. The bishop's servants seemed as close and as dear to me as my own relations. And the bishop himself... Now, he truly was an assured friend. He's gone. And I too, who knows, will not be that much longer in this world. Must leave it all. Leave it to younger men. To wiser men, perhaps. Come, come, Septimus Harding. This is but an old fellow's melancholy. What use is your religion if you cannot apply it now? Trust in it, Septimus, as you have urged others to do yourself.
Dear Mr. Harding, I am so sorry I'm late.
Oh, well.
Diocesan business, I'm afraid. Now, about Hiram's hospital.
Yes.
And the wardenship thereof.
Yes.
First, income. I suppose you are aware that £450 is the most that you can expect.
Yes.
Secondly, duties. Previously, as far as I can understand, it can hardly be said that there were very many duties.
Really? Well, such duties as there were, Mr. Slope, I carried out to the satisfaction of the late bishop.
Oh, I'm sure you did, Mr. Harding. I'm sure you did. Mr. Harding, you are aware, how could you fail to be, that things are a good deal changed in Barchester. Things are a good deal changed in the world at large. There are demands for efficiency and value for money. New measures are being taken to eradicate indolence and wastefulness, to obtain adequate work from those who receive wages, to dismiss those who fail to give such work. Things are a good deal changed, Mr. Harding, and the useless rubbish of centuries past is being carted away.
You have turned down the wardenship, Papa.
Yes, I have. Well, that is, I think I have. I'm certain Mr. Slope believes I've turned it down. Or believes he heard enough from me to present my words in such a way. I am rather of the opinion, dearest Susan, that he wanted me to turn it down and goaded me into doing so.
But, Papa, if you are prepared to live with the reduced income...
There are other conditions, my dear. A Sabbath day school, for instance, is to be attached to the hospital.
What, for the old men?
No, Susan, for the children of the poor. And there are to be morning and evening prayers, 2 services on Sunday and 1 in the week.
Could you not have endured these extra duties?
Perhaps I could. Perhaps it was as much the manner in which I was told of them that I could not stomach. Dear Susan, it seems that I belong with the useless rubbish of ages past. I am fit only to be carted off to the dump.
Papa, what a thing to say.
What a thing, indeed. Oh, God, forgive me, Susan, if I do him an injustice, but Mr. Slope strikes me as somewhat obnoxious and unpleasant, crafty with it, and his craft, I fear, has had some success with your sister, blinded her to his unpleasantness, and convinced her that he is good and meek and charitable. He's called on Eleanor a few times, you know.
Has he, indeed?
Most recently, I gather, he spoke to her about the wardenship. Presented the new terms so prettily, it seems that Eleanor was quite taken. All but promised to become a teacher at Mr. Slope's new Sabbath day school.
Well, we can only pray that crafty Mr. Slope is not quite crafty enough. And that Eleanor is not persuaded to make a more binding promise.
Susan, you mean marriage? Mm. Marriage to Mr. Slope?
It's not improbable, Papa. Mr. Slope might well consider it an agreeable prospect if he knows that Eleanor's income is £1,000 a year.
No doubt. No doubt. Oh. Oh. Marriage. So soon after John Bold dying. And to Mr. Slope, the only man in the world whom I suspect I really don't care for. Oh, Susan.
In all honesty, Papa, I don't suppose that Eleanor's even begun to think about it. But the chances are that Mr. Slope has, and he'll do more than think about it if we don't take care. Ah, that is the Archdeacon returned.
We will not raise the topic of marriage, if you please. But I suppose I must tell him about the wardenship.
They can't do this, Harding. They can't turn a warden into a Sunday schoolmaster. Proudie can't do it. Proudie's chaplain can't do it.
Not even Dr. Proudie's wife?
Not even her. None of them.
But surely, Archdeacon, the bishop has the power to appoint whomsoever he pleases.
Well, my dear, I don't know about that. Let him try it and see what the newspapers will say.
The newspaper? Oh.
Yes, Harding, I fancy we'll have the popular cry on our side for once.
Oh, I'd as soon not have the popular cry on any side if it means that my name must be brought into it all. I've no wish to be paraded, either as a monster or a martyr. I rather think, Dr. Grantly, that we should forget the whole thing.
Nonsense.
I'm getting old.
Absolute nonsense. You're not old, but you are as timid as ever you were. Harding, it is your duty to resume your place at the hospital, and if you do not do so, your conscience will never forgive you. Clearly, it is Slope's intention that you should refuse the wardenship so that he may give it to some creature of his own. He wants to show his power and insult us all by insulting you. You owe it to us all to resist him, and you owe it to yourself, Harding, not to be lily-livered.
Archdeacon!
Lily-livered? I doubt, though, if there is any true courage in squabbling for money.
Perhaps not, Harding. But it is a wicked world we live in, and if honest men are not prepared to squabble for money, the dishonest men, I fear, will get it all for themselves.
I assure you, my lord, Mr. Harding rejected the offer absolutely and unequivocally.
Well, I'm very surprised, I must say.
Well, you wouldn't be, my lord, if you knew these people better. Grantly, Harding, they all have made up their minds to oppose your authority.
But when I talked to Mr. Harding at the party, he seemed so keen to win back the post.
He is keen, my lord, but only if he can hold it without acknowledging your lordship's jurisdiction.
Oh, well, I think that is out of the question, is it not?
It most certainly is. The wardenship must be offered to a more deserving man.
Indeed.
With the rector of Puddingdale, for instance.
Mr. Quiverful, my lord.
Ah, of course, Mr. Quiverful.
He would be far more appreciative of the income, too. I mean, he has 14 children, my lord.
14? Well, yes. Let us offer the wardenship to him.
This is quite definite, is it?
Quite definite. I'm afraid Mr. Harding couldn't accept the post's new conditions.
I see.
Naturally, Mr. Quiverful, the same conditions would be imposed upon yourself if you were to become warden.
I'm sure they won't present a difficulty.
Bobby, Sarah,
respecting the income, Mr. Quiverful, it is much reduced from what it was. But I don't believe you would find the amount unhelpful in your particular circumstances, Mr. Quiverful.
Oh, I'm certain I wouldn't. 14 children, Mr. Slope.
So I understand.
7 boys, 7 girls.
Oh, a nice balance.
Well, I imagine that my need...
Dave, I have a job for you.
And Mrs. Quiverful's need is greater than Mr. Harding's, at any rate.
Oh, undoubtedly.
I mean, why should he trouble himself with Hiram's hospital when it's his daughter's money to call on?
Mr. Harding's daughter? Which daughter are you referring to, Mr. Quiverful? The Archdeacon's wife?
No. Mrs. Bold, the widow.
Oh, really? How much?
$1,200 a year.
$1,200?
Yes, so I understand.
There. The Bishop of Barchester. What do you think, Charlotte?
Oh, heavens!
What? Looks too much like him, you mean, or not enough?
Oh, it's very much fit. Bishop.
Do you suppose he'd buy it from me?
He might, so he could destroy it.
Oh.
You haven't done very much, Bertie, about getting commissions.
Oh, you mean for my sculpting?
Hmm.
Well, who is there in Barchester who'd have his head done in marble?
Mr. Slope, perhaps.
Oh, heaven forbid. I'd be all right in London if the governor would give me enough to set me up in a studio.
Bertie, Papa wouldn't give you a shilling to set you up. Hmm. Papa hasn't got a shilling. I fear you must face the truth, Bertie. You'll never make money from artistic endeavour.
I agree. In fact, I don't think I can make money from any endeavour. You see, Charlotte, some people have a gift for making money, but they don't know how to spend it. And there are others who have a talent for all sorts of outlay, but just can't earn a thing. My genius puts me firmly in the latter class.
There is one line of business you might be able to pursue.
I doubt it.
With help, I mean. I have a plan, Bertie.
Dearest sister, when did you not have a plan?
Well, someone in this family must make plans.
Yes, dearest sister.
Someone must prevent us all from falling into beggary and disrepute.
Yes, dearest sister. Well, what is your plan?
You must marry a woman with money.
Well, I won't marry a woman without. Any particular one in mind?
Yes, Bertie. The widow, Mrs. Bold.
He's a great big naughty boy.
He is big, at least.
I shall have to send him away to a great big romping school where great big naughty boys get punished.
And where they can't wreak havoc with their mother's beautiful long hair. Mrs. Bold, may I ask you a plain question?
Certainly. And I shall give you a plain answer or none at all.
Oh, well then, it relates to your father. Is he, do you suppose, genuinely anxious to take up his old position of warden of the hospital?
Why do you ask me, Mr. Slope? Why don't you ask my father?
Oh, my dear Mrs. Bold. Oh, perhaps it is all my own fault. That sermon I gave... Alas, that sermon. It appears to have quite prevented your father from meeting me on amicable terms, so that, though no one can esteem Mr. Harding more than I do, I fear the feeling is not reciprocated. Mrs. Bold, in spite of the sermon I preached, in spite of all my delinquencies, you have allowed me to regard you as a friend. To you I can speak openly. Therefore... Mrs. Bold, the situation is this.
The bishop thought it right that this matter of the wardenship should be conducted through me, and so I spoke with your father.
Yes.
And at the end of the interview, he gave me to understand that he declined the appointment.
No, Mr. Slope, not the appointment itself, the new conditions, the Sunday school.
Oh, Mrs. Bold. Oh, no doubt, the fault was mine. I spoke with too little caution about the school, perhaps because I had already spoken about it with you, and you had shown such enthusiasm. Anyway, your father became, shall I say, a little put out, declared quite emphatically that he would not return to the hospital if the proposed conditions were attached. So when I advised the bishop of this matter, the bishop decided he had no choice but to offer the position to someone else.
Someone else?
Yes, to the rector of Puddingdale, Mr. Quiverful.
Mr. Quiverful?
Yes.
And has Mr. Quiverful accepted?
Yes.
Oh. Well, that is the end of it, then.
No. My dear Mrs. Bold, not so. It is not the end of it. And it is because it is not the end of it, dear lady, that I am come to see you.
Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope. Episode 2.
I wish I knew how to judge Mr. Slope. My father does not care for him, that is clear. And dear Papa is generally loath to think ill of anyone. There is, I confess, something in the chaplain's manner which I should distrust, and yet despite that, surely he is good. Surely he is kind. How can I not trust Mr. Slope? And how can I not be grateful to him when he is so determined to help Papa?
Mrs. Bold, let me give you this assurance. Your father's interest shall not be sacrificed, not if I can prevent it.
Oh, Mr. Slope, if anything can be done...
I will speak with the bishop. I will endeavor to turn him from the great injustice that he would inflict upon your father and persuade him to withdraw the offer that has been made to Mr. Quiverful. I will, in short, use all my powers to ensure that Mr. Harding becomes warden of Highlands Hospital once more, as is his right.
Mr. Slope, I...
Oh, no. I don't wish for thanks. Certainly not until they are merited. But this I do want, Mrs. Bold. To make friends here in Barchester, here in this fold to which it has pleased God to call me as one of the humblest of his shepherds.
I expect you will soon make plenty of friends, Mr. Slope.
I mean real, true friends. Sweet souls whom I can reverence and admire and love. For if such as these cannot be my friends, then I would sooner spend my time alone.
Oh, you will not need to do that, Mr. Slope, I'm sure.
I hope I will not, Mrs. Bold. I very much hope I will not. May God bless you, dear lady. You and your darling boy.
Guess what, Madeline? I'm going to be married.
Are you? Well, there's no other act of folly that you haven't managed to commit, so you're quite right to try that one.
Bertie hasn't yet asked the lady in question.
Who is the lady in question, Charlotte?
Mrs. Bold.
Mrs. Bold? The vapid thing in the widow's cap?
She is not vapid, sister. She's very lovely. She was by far the loveliest woman at the bishop's the other night, excepting you, that is.
And anyway, I'm marrying for money, not looks.
Oh, well, marry her then.
I think, Bertie, that we ought to invite the lucky lady round.
Oh, yes. She will have to be told.
She shall take tea with us.
If she must. And I shall invite my own guest.
Mr. Slope, how are you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Preoccupied as I am with affairs of the diocese, I have no time for sickness, you know.
Really? Mr. Slope?
Slope is here.
Ah, Mr. Slope. Good evening.
Mr. Slope, a very good evening to you.
Ah, Signora, good evening. How perfectly delighted I am to... Mrs. Bold.
Good evening, Mr. Slope.
Ah, this is a surprise.
Yes, indeed it is.
An exceedingly pleasant one, of course. How is your dear father, Mrs. Bold?
My father is in reasonable health, thank you.
Oh, that's most gratifying.
Bertie, you shall escort Mrs. Bold. Bertie?
Eh? Oh, of course. Mrs. Bold, may I?
With pleasure.
And you, Mr. Slope, must escort me.
Indeed.
I hope you've no objection to taking a walk, Mr. Slope.
Objection? No, no.
It would be a pity, would it not, to waste such a perfect harvest moon?
Yes, yes, it would.
Of course, it does mean deserting the Signora.
Oh, I'm sure she understands. Though the two of you, Mr. Slope, were in very earnest conversation, what was your topic, I wonder?
Sabbath day schools, Miss Stannard.
Indeed.
I attach great importance to them, as Mrs. Bold is aware.
Yes.
Sabbath day schools? Well, I had no idea that Madeline shared your interest, Mr. Slope. I have to say, being educated on a Sunday sounds rather hard work to me.
Now, isn't this a pretty spot?
Those are the gardens of the hospital down there. Hiram's Hospital.
Ah, yes. Where your father was warden, I believe.
Shall we move on?
It's such a lovely place. It surprises me your father could give it up, Mrs. Bowles.
You know there's something of a cool breeze.
Oh, no, not cool. Refreshing.
But he's due to return to the hospital, is he not?
Well... Oh, I thought it was all settled.
No. No, it is not all settled. Not quite.
I think we should move on. It wouldn't do for the ladies to catch a chill.
Come then, Mr. Slope. But this is why the ladies are thought to be so frail. Because the gentlemen are unhappy. They cannot cosset them.
I suppose he has some part to play in the matter, has he?
Mr. Slope, you mean?
Yes. Is he getting in the way of your father's appointment?
He did at first, perhaps, but recently he has taken Papa's side against the bishop.
Oh, yes?
He is doing all he can, it seems, to persuade Dr. Proudie to change his mind. My father still won't trust him, though. He finds him arrogant. As do others in Barchester.
Yes, and your father's right. You take my word for it, Mrs. Bold. That fellow Slope is arrogant. Arrogant and false.
I have decided, that is, it appears to me that it might be an excellent idea to make a stand. Yes, Mrs. Proudie is an excellent woman, a very determined and industrious woman, but, I wish I had never... I wish at least that I had stood up to her earlier. But I must do so now, I think, before she becomes thoroughly conversant with diocesan affairs, and while there is some discernible rift between herself and Mr. Slope. What the cause of this rift might be, I have no idea, but that there is a rift, I'm certain. Why otherwise would Slope come to me and suggest that Mr. Harding, after all, be given the wardenship? There is a rift, and I should take advantage of it if I can. Yes, be the master in my own diocese.
£3.05.
Yes?
I came to talk to you, my dear.
Yes?
About those Quiverfuls.
Quiverfuls?
Yes.
£1.12.
I see you're very busy.
7 pence. What about the Quiverfuls?
You are working on the palace accounts, I think. Everything satisfactory, my dear?
Bishop, what did you wish to say about the Quiverfuls?
Oh,
merely that perhaps there is a slight difficulty as regards the wardenship.
Well, what sort of difficulty? It is all decided and arranged. £4.17.07. What sort of difficulty?
Simply that Mr. Slope...
Mr. Slope?
Yes, Mr. Slope seems to think that if Mr. Harding were not appointed warden, public feeling in the matter might be against us.
Oh, Mr. Slope seems to think that, does he? What has Mr. Slope to do with it?
Well...
I hope you're not intending, my lord, to allow yourself to be governed by your own chaplain.
Certainly not, my dear. Nothing is less probable.
The wardenship was offered to Mr. Harding, and he refused it.
He did.
The position has now been given to someone else, to Mr. Quiverful. Mm. And there's an end of the matter. Or so it seems to me.
Good night, then, Archdeacon.
Good night, Susan.
Eleanor took tea with the Stanhopes yesterday.
Mm.
My sister took tea with the Stanhopes.
Mm.
And who do you suppose took tea with her?
Mm.
Apart from the Stanhopes, that is. Mr. Slope.
What?
Eleanor confessed as much.
Mr. Slope.
It is quite clear now that she has some sort of feeling towards him, else why should she pretend beforehand that only she had been invited to the Stanhopes?
Oh, vileness. Vileness! I admit, Susan, that I never liked your sister's taste with regard to men, but Mr. Slope!
Good heavens! And so soon after John Bold's death.
So soon indeed. Oh, even Mr. Bold deserves better treatment than that. You see, Slope's plan, do you not?
Why, he'll marry Eleanor and get her money.
Well, yes, of course, but his method, Susan, his method. The sly Tartuffe. Winning over the daughter by providing for the father, showing her how good he is, what power he has, the things he'll do on account of her beaux yeux. We'll fix him, though. Now that Mr. Arabin is to be vicar at St. Ewell's, we'll fix him.
Oh? Is Mr. Arabin to place some unlooked-for impediment between Eleanor and Mr. Slope?
I meant fix him in the long run, Susan dear.
Ah.
If anyone can bring Slope down, it is Mr. Arabin, which is why I asked him to come to St. Ewell's. We are very fortunate, Susan. It is not a rich preferment, St. Ewell's, and Mr. Arabin is a clever man.
Yes, I'm sure he is. Though if it is not a rich preferment, perhaps he is not that clever.
He is a fellow of Lazarus College, and he is a staunch churchman. Just the person to deal with Slope, as indeed he has already shown in the columns of the Jupiter. Took Slope on, you know, and thrashed him.
Yes, Archdeacon. My impression of him the day that he was here was that he was a little inclined to be conceited.
Conceited? No, no, Susan. Too diffident, if anything.
Well, I shall have the chance to know him better in the next few weeks.
Indeed, you shall, my dear. Now, there's a thought. While Mr. Arabin is staying with us, why should we not have your father and Eleanor to stay also? The pretext would be that they were to help Arabin settle in and become acquainted with the parish, but it would serve very effectively to remove your sister from Mr. Slope's odious attentions.
A clever plan, Archdeacon.
It is. Is it not? A spell of enforced isolation may, with our help, teach Eleanor the sort of man Slope is. Yes. Good night to you, my dear.
So, Mr. Arabin, are you much disheartened by what you've seen thus far?
Of the parish or the parsonage?
Both.
Well, they are both pleasant enough, I think.
And that, I think, is a careful enough answer, Mr. Arabin.
Shall we take a look upstairs?
There is, I believe, an ancient legend concerning the parish of St. Ewold. A priestess lived here, it is said, and she could cure diseases.
Yes, and she had a well, did she?
Yes, she did, Eleanor.
I wonder if you object to the priestess and her well, Mr. Arabin.
The well I can tolerate, but I'm not at all sure about the priestess.
Oh, that's a pity.
A parish should always have its priestess to complement its priest. The duties are much better done, you know, when they're divided between them.
But, sister, what if the priestess should hold sway entirely?
Which she would in my case, I'm certain. A curate I might manage, but not a sacred lady.
There are examples, it's true, of omnipotent priestesses. I have heard that there is one to be found at Barchester.
Susan!
A she-bishop who is most imperious in all things pertaining to the altar.
Now this is a pleasant little room.
Yes, we seem to have lost Dr. Grantley.
He went down to the cellar, I think.
A pleasant view from the window, Mr. Arabin, if you were to choose this room as your private sanctum.
Yes. Yes. The river, the cathedral, and the bishop's palace. What is that building to the right?
Oh, that is Hiram's Hospital, Mr. Arabin.
Ah, yes, Hiram's Hospital. Now, I do believe this ought to be my sanctum. Or should I call it my redoubt? I can sit here and have a complete view of my adversaries, far away at them from a comfortable distance.
I never knew anyone like you, clergymen, always ready to fight each other.
We have to fight. Ours is a church militant.
But you wage your bitterest wars about such trifling things.
Wars about trifling things, Mrs. Bold, are always bitter. When the differences are great, men quarrel with more courtesy.
However they fight, I think our clergymen bring the church into disrepute.
Regarding the church...
But Mrs. Bold...
My view has
I
always
accept
been...
that we churchmen have our antipathies and enmity. Do forgive me, Mr. Harding.
No, Harding.
We none of us are perfect. We all have our share of human frailty. We bicker, we fight, take undue delight in victory. But what can we do? What would you have in place of our differences, Mrs. Bold? A church with an elected, infallible leader? Does the Pope's church, in truth, suffer any less from bickerings and disrepute?
No, Mr. Arabin. No, I do not suppose that it does.
You see, it is so very easy to condemn. No life could be more delicious than that of a writer for newspapers or a member of the parliamentary opposition.
You must forgive me. I was thinking with sorrow of the ill will that has lately come upon us at Barchester, and I spoke more freely than I should.
Arabin! Arabin?
We're in here, Archdeacon.
The cellar, Arabin, is perfectly abominable. It would be an act of vandalism to put a bottle of wine into it until the area has been properly roofed, walled, and floored.
Oh, very well.
So, there's the cellar, the fireplace in the kitchen. Oh, did you ever see such an attempt at a kitchen fireplace? The dining room, now, that will have to be remodeled altogether.
Really?
Well, I've just measured it. 16 feet by 15. Minuscule. No dining table worthy of the name could fit into that space.
It might do satisfactorily for a round table.
For a what, Harding?
A round table.
A round table. Harding, a round dinner table is the most appalling item of furniture that was ever invented.
Oh.
Round table. Good heavens.
Good morning, Papa.
Good morning.
Would you like some coffee, Papa?
Oh, yes, thank you.
I think there is something wrong this morning, Papa.
Yes, Charlotte, I rather think there is. Take a look at this letter, for instance. Requesting payment for clothing.
Oh, yes, Papa. It's for the 6 months before we left Italy. The man should have sent it to me.
Which he had, if you'd been willing to pay it all. I see that much of the expense has been incurred by Madeline.
She has little else to amuse her, Papa, except her clothes.
Whereas your brother, it seems, finds everything to his amusement, including debt. I learn from this letter that he has had a bill for £700 overdue for 9 months.
Oh.
When I tell you, Charlotte, I won't help him settle it. Let him go to prison. That'll take him off my hands for a while.
Oh, no, no, Papa, please. You must give him another chance. I have a... He has a plan, Papa.
A plan? What sort of plan?
Morning, sir.
Morning, Charlotte.
Morning, Bertie.
He's intending to get married, Papa.
Who is?
You are, Bertie.
Oh, yes. In the fullness of time.
No, Bertie, with due expedition.
Yes, sister.
Married, married. Is he going to marry in prison?
Prison's no answer.
You owe a fellow £700.
700? No, no, no. I dispute that. All I had from him was 150. Yeah, and some paving stones. And, rocking horses. Yes, they're in London somewhere, I should imagine. I'll make inquiries if you're interested, sir.
You're an idiot. You're an idiot and a reprobate. And your life is destined to end in ruin!
Do you think he'd like the paving stones?
I tell you something, Bertie. You'll be sleeping on paving stones if you don't take care. Papa is very angry.
Mr. Quibble, Mr. Slope is coming. Bessie saw him at the gate.
Oh, very well, Letitia.
Children, be quiet. Mr. Slope's coming. He's wanting to settle with you about the hospital.
Yes, very likely, Letitia.
Now you must stir yourself, Q.
I am stirring myself, my dear.
I mean, you must show Mr. Slope that you are very much desirous of this promotion. You must say nothing that could possibly encourage him to change his mind. Whatever some jealous, unkind folk in Barchester may say, you'll do nothing wrong in accepting the wardenship.
No, Letitia.
You did not seek it.
No, Letitia.
You did not accept it till you knew it had been refused by Mr. Harding.
That is right, Letitia.
He's here!
Right.
Of course he isn't ill at all. Dr. Proudie is an absolute coward, that's what he is.
But surely, Archdeacon, Mr. Slope will talk with us about the wardenship, even if the bishop won't. Might we not press Mr. Harding's claim with him?
No, Arabin, that's not to be countenanced. I have no wish to gratify Slope by acknowledging his status in the affair.
Well, then, you must write to the bishop, I suppose.
I've already done that, Arabin, and vigorously, too.
And you've received a reply?
I have. Almost 2 weeks ago it was, from Mr. Slope.
Oh.
Stating that Dr. Proudie will be giving the matter of the wardenship his best consideration. It's an outrage, Arabin. The bishop's too afraid to talk with me, and I can't even be certain that he's looked at my letter. How am I to champion Harding's cause?
Mr. Quiverful, you will recall that when last I was here, I suggested to you that you might become the new warden of the hospital.
Oh, yes. Indeed, I understood you to say that the bishop himself had authorized the offer.
Oh, did I? Did I go so far as that? Well, perhaps, Mr. Quiverful, in my anxiety that you should receive the position, I committed myself further than I should have done. But I don't think, on reflection, that I was insufficiently prudent to refer to authorization from the bishop.
Mrs. Proudie did speak to my wife, though.
Mrs. Proudie. Yes.
She gave her as distinct a promise as one person can give to another.
My dear Mr. Quiverful, if we are to take notice of what passes between the ladies in these matters, we shall be in a thorough nest of troubles, believe me. Mrs. Proudie is in every way a most estimable lady, but the patronage of the diocese, I assure you, does not rest with her.
Am I to understand, then, that I have received no promise concerning the wardenship?
You certainly did receive a promise, but the promise was conditional upon Mr. Harding's refusing the offer that was made to him, and it now seems that Mr. Harding did not refuse it.
But on your previous visit here, Mr. Slope, you said that he did. He refused it, you said, in your own hearing.
That, in very truth, is what I thought. But apparently, Mr. Quiverful, I was mistaken.
So, you have resigned the wardenship?
Letitia, it transpires that I have had no opportunity of accepting it. You see, there were no witnesses to the offer that Mr. Slope made.
Witnesses? Must clergymen now have witnesses to their words? Mr. Quiverful, he made the promise in the bishop's name.
He did make the promise, yes, but that is nothing to the purpose.
Oh, but it is everything to the purpose, and I shall tell them so. I shall shout it from the town cross of Barchester. Witnesses, indeed!
My dear, it will not be to our advantage to make trouble.
Oh, really?
Mr. Slope says that if we do not stand in Mr. Harding's way, then the bishop will ensure that we are not unrewarded.
Mr. Slope says that, does he? And were there witnesses to Mr. Slope's kind offer?
We must be patient, Letitia. We must wait a little, that's all.
And shall we feed the children by waiting? Shall we by waiting put George and Tom and Sam into the world, or make Jane and Bessie fit even to be governesses? Shall we by waiting pay for those things that we bought in Barchester last week, that we bought Quiverful because Mr. Slope promised you the wardenship?
But what else can we do? Believe me, Letitia, I feel the disappointment as much as you do. And I feel it more for your sake than for my own.
Oh, you're too good, Q, too soft. You let yourself be used by these people. But I'll not permit it. I shall speak to the bishop. No, I'll speak to Mrs. Proudie. Well, she is the bishop, as all the world knows. I shall speak to her. I will go to the bishop's palace at once.
Well, what have I done in my first few weeks as vicar of St. Ewell's? I have preached my first sermon, which I think found sufficient favour, not least perhaps because I enlarged on my duty to teach well the doctrine of Christ as much as on the duty of the parishioners to obey it. What else? Well, I have met Dr. Stanhope and his interesting family. I found the Neroni lady very clever and very, very handsome. Her brother is likable, perhaps, in small doses. Mrs. Bowles seemed to find him congenial enough when we were there. And was I thought a little less than charitable about the Signora when we were coming back in the Archdeacon's carriage? Altogether, I have been made very welcome, and if I do not become contented as Vicar of St. Ewell's, I will only have myself to blame.
Mrs. Quiverful!
Mrs. Proudie.
How very good to see you.
I will be submissive and pitiful. Mrs. Proudie, I am come concerning the wardenship of the hospital.
Ah, yes. Tell me, Mrs. Quiverful, is it decided yet upon which day you are all to move into Barchester?
Oh, Mrs. Proudie, I fear we are not to move into Barchester at all.
You are not? Why not?
Well, Mrs. Proudie, Mr. Slope...
Mr. Slope?
Mr. Slope visited my husband this morning and told him that at the bishop's request... the offer of the wardenship was to be withdrawn.
Withdrawn? Withdrawn?
Oh, Mrs. Proudie. Oh, Mrs. Proudie, this is more than I can endure. 14 children, Mrs. Proudie.
Stay here, Mrs. Quiverful. Do not move. I will talk to the bishop.
Well, if Mr. Quiverful is no longer desirous of becoming warden...
He made his feelings more than clear to me, my lord.
Then I suppose we might say that the whole somewhat vexatious matter is now closed.
I think so, my lord.
Bishop! I must speak to you, Mr. Slope.
Mrs. Proudie...
What is this, Bishop, about Mr. Quiverful?
Ah, yes. Well, my dear...
Mr. Quiverful, ma'am, has abandoned his claim.
Mr. Quiverful, sir, has not abandoned anything.
Oh.
His lordship's word has been pledged to him, and it must be respected, must it not, Bishop?
Well, my dear,
Perhaps, ma'am, I ought not to interfere.
Certainly you ought not. I think you are altogether too inclined to be interfering.
But, ma'am, I have thought it my imperative duty to give the bishop proper advice. It has become clear that in the interview which I had with Mr. Harding concerning the wardenship, I somehow misunderstood him.
And it is equally clear that you misunderstood Mr. Quiverful when you interviewed him this morning. Why these interviews, Mr. Slope? What business was it of yours to go to Mr. Quiverful today? Who commissioned you to see him? Answer me, sir. Who sent you?
I think
in the circumstances, that it would be better for me not to answer such a question.
Did anyone send you, sir?
Mrs. Proudie, I am very aware how much I am obliged to you for your kindness, and also what is owed by courtesy from a gentleman to a lady, but there are higher considerations than these, Mrs. Proudie. My duty is to his lordship, and since I have received approval from him, I do not require it from another.
Mr. Slope. Mr. Slope, I will trouble you, if you please, to leave this room. Yeah. I wish to speak to my lord alone. Mr. Slope, I wish to be alone with the bishop.
I fear, Mrs. Proudie, that it is impossible for me to leave at the present moment.
Mr. Slope!
His lordship has summoned me on most important diocesan business.
Do not bandy words with me, you ungrateful man! My lord, will you please ask Mr. Slope to leave the room?
Well, my dear...
Is Mr. Slope to leave this room, or am I?
Well...
Well...
Well, my dear, Mr. Slope and I are very busy.
Diocesan business, Mrs. Proudie.
I see. I see.
Well, if I may be permitted to make an observation, my lord...
Yes?
This incident will do you no harm at all, my lord.
You think it won't?
It wouldn't be right for a bishop to acquire the reputation for, how shall I put it, being subject to the influence of his wife. Not at least in respect of matters relating to the church.
Well, of course, Mrs. Proudie has a strong and forceful personality.
She does. I have felt the power of it myself. And in my own regard, too, it grieves me to oppose a lady whom I have looked upon as my patroness, who first recommended me to your lordship's notice. But I am the bishop's chaplain, not Mrs. Proudie's, and it is because I have concern for your interests, my lord, that I venture to speak my mind and tell you that no longer can you, as bishop, suffer Mrs. Proudie's interference.
Ah, well, I wouldn't say that she has interfered.
She has, my lord.
You think so?
She has interfered.
Oh.
But she will not interfere any more.
Mrs. Quiverful?
Yes, Mrs. Proudie?
Hello, pray keep your seat, Mrs. Quiverful. Oh.
Your husband has been most weak and foolish, Mrs. Quiverful.
Oh, don't say so.
He has resigned what I was empowered to offer him. He should not have done that.
Oh, Mrs. Proudie, what am I to do? 14 children, Mrs. Proudie, and barely bread enough to feed them.
If he had agreed nothing with Mr. Slope this morning, if he had refused to take the bait that was thrown him, then nothing could have prevented him from becoming warden of Hiram's Hospital.
Oh, it isn't fair. It isn't fair.
No, Mrs. Quiverful, it is not fair. And I tell you this, I will not permit it. The wardenship belongs to your husband by right and shall be insisted upon. Oh, cease your tears, Mrs. Quiverful. We shall prevail.
My dear Mrs. Bold, I cannot preclude myself from the pleasure of sending you these few lines in order to advise you that I have today received the bishop's assurance that he intends to offer the wardenship to your esteemed father. I should also add that when he does so, no reference at all will be made to the manner in which your father may choose to perform his duty, though it is still my wish that, with the help of your sweet, pious labors, we may live to attach a Sabbath day school to the ancient endowment of Hiram's Hospital, as you and I discussed when last I had the fortune to call upon you. I trust, by the way, that my darling little Johnny is as strong as ever. But I also hope that he has discontinued the habit of making those fierce assaults upon his mother's beautiful silken tresses. I am, pray believe me, your most sincere friend, Obadiah Slope.
The missus is still at Plumstead, sir, at the Archdeacon's.
So I understand. Are there items of post, etc., which are sent to Plumstead this afternoon?
Oh, yes, sir, there are, sir.
Good. I would like you to do everything you can to ensure that this letter is also delivered. It must reach Mrs. Bold today. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
It is a letter of great importance and great urgency. An elegant letter. A letter that effortlessly combines diocesan business with business of another sort. It will do my standing with Mrs. Bold no harm at all. It is a very great misfortune, therefore, that I should allow myself to spend a certain amount of time in the company of La Signora Neroni. I ought to fight against this impulse, for if scandal were to spread, if by chance the widow discovered that I am pursuing the Signora, well, then I would lose the widow, lose £1,000 a year, lose my status, and much more. I am a fool to involve myself with the Signora. She has a husband. She had no money. She's a cripple. I suppose I must be in love. Oh, Signora.
I did not expect you today, Mr. Slope.
Did you not?
In fact, I was in the act of writing to you.
Oh.
But now my scrawl may go into the basket.
Oh, what? No, 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 it shall not. Nothing that you write for my eyes, Signora, shall be so desecrated.
Gracious me, I hope you don't have that ugly trick of keeping one's letters, Mr. Slope.
Well, I don't put them into the waste paper basket, at any rate. If I were to destroy them, I would ensure that they perished worthily and were burnt upon a pyre, as Dido was of old.
Ah, yes. You know, of all the ladies of my acquaintance, Lady Dido was the most absurd. She could bear to lose neither her city of wealth nor her lover, and as a result fell very foolishly between two stools. Whatever you do, Mr. Slope, never mingle love and business.
Love and... No, indeed.
Stick to gold, or follow your love like a true man, but don't try to do both, or you'll die of a broken heart. What will it be with you, Mr. Slope? Love or money?
Well... Love, of course, must be the strongest passion a man can feel. But in my own particular case, Signora, the love I feel must be returned if it is to be strong.
Oh, my friend, take my advice. Never mind love. It always plays false, even with those who in their love are true. Witness Desdemona, smothered. Witness Ophelia, went mad. There's no happiness in love, Mr. Slope, except at the end of an English novel.
Perhaps you are right, Signora, but I cannot believe that you listen to your own advice, or that your heart never makes its own special plea.
My heart? Oh, no. I was born without such a thing.
But that is a heavy charge to bring against yourself, and one of which I cannot find you guilty.
But you were in no position to give a verdict on the matter, since you have not tried me.
Then, dearest Signora, I...
No, don't tell me that you mean to do so, Mr. Slope. I know you have no such real intention.
Oh, but Signora...
Look me in the face, Mr. Slope. Boldly and openly.
Oh, Madeline...
But confine your boldness, please, to your eyes. Tell me, then, am I to understand that you love me, Mr. Slope?
Love you? Oh, yes. Madeline, I love you. Oh, most assuredly I do.
I see. Then answer me another question, if you will. When are you to be married to the widow? Here you are, sir.
Oh, thank you so much. Is there anything else?
Oh, yes, Mr. Harden. A letter which was brought round.
Oh, hand it here. I'll take it. Oh,
thank you, Your Reverence.
See this, Harding? Yes. I rather think it's Mr. Slope's handwriting.
Yes, Your Reverence. He called with it himself.
Did he, indeed? Ready?
Very well, Your Reverence. Hold on.
Here, Harding, you have it. If you wish, I won't be the bearer of Slope's love letters.
You are the girl's father. You must do with it as you deem fit.
Pray don't defend yourself, Mr. Slope. I feel it to be rather a compliment that you are devoted to my beauty and yet on the eve of matrimony to another.
Oh, believe me, Madeline, I have no intention of marrying Mrs. Bold.
But you are a worshipper of hers, surely.
A worshipper? I am not, I assure you.
You surprise me. To my eye, you know, she is the perfection of English beauty. She's rich, too. Just the person to attract you, I would have thought.
Oh, you are very cruel, Signora.
Cruel? But Mr. Slope, what would you say of me if I returned your ardour? If I bound you by a lover's oath to do penance at this couch of mine?
Oh, Madeline, for your love I would sacrifice the world.
Really? You would sacrifice even your ecclesiastical career? Your prospect of becoming a bishop or a dean? What nonsense! What a falsehood, Mr. Slope! Listen, my so-called husband, Signor Neroni, he whom I once swore to love and obey, is so base a man, so vile, that I can only think of him with revulsion and disgust. In the council chamber of my soul, I have divorced him, and I care nothing for what the world might say. Will you, my friend, be as frank as I? Will you take me to your home as your wife? Will you, before your colleagues here in Barchester, call me Mrs. Slope?
Were you free to marry, Signora, I would take you to my house tomorrow and wish for no higher privilege.
I am free to marry, Mr. Slope. Sacrifice the world and prove yourself a true man.
Signora, I am...
You are having second thoughts. Very sensible. Your nice, pleasant world, Mr. Slope, should not be sacrificed for the smiles of a crippled lady.
What is it that I am supposed to have done?
Eleanor! My dear Eleanor!
Dr. Grantly can barely bring himself to accompany me into dinner. There are dark looks in my direction, terrible silences during the meal. I feel as if I've been tried and found guilty without anyone taking the trouble to let me know the crime.
Sister, you surely must know the reason. It is all on account of the letter that you received today.
The letter? What of the letter?
It was from Mr. Slope, was it not?
Yes, it was.
Oh, Eleanor! But why? Why do you get letters from Mr. Slope when you are aware, as you are, that he is a person so distasteful to Papa and to the Archdeacon and to your friends?
Susan, I have received only one letter from Mr. Slope, and that is all.
What was it about?
I can't tell you that. It was confidential.
Was it indeed?
It was regarding a third person.
I see. And it was in no way, then, personal to yourself.
I won't say that exactly.
Well, this seems to me to be very singular. A young lady in your position receiving a letter from an unmarried gentleman and clearly ashamed to divulge its contents.
I'm not ashamed. I am ashamed of nothing in this matter. You were very illiberal, you know, very one-sided. What would be kind and generous in another man, you and Dr. Grantly find odious and impudent in Mr. Slope. It is you, not I, who should be ashamed for showing such prejudice against him.
I am, unfortunately, many years your senior, but I cannot hope for that reason that you will comply with my wishes. You will allow, however, that the Archdeacon knows rather more of the world than you do, Eleanor, and you might therefore consent to be guided by him in this regard. In his opinion, sister, Mr. Slope is not at all a proper person to write you letters, and he feels very strongly that correspondence between yourself and Mr. Slope cannot be permitted to go on in this house.
Forgive me, Susan, but whichever house I am in, I shall receive whatever letters I please from whomsoever I please.
Sister, dearest sister, I tell you, you must drop him.
But why? Why should I drop him? Because he thought it necessary to write a letter to me? I shall not drop him. I see no harm in his acquaintance.
Susan?
Archdeacon?
If your sister is with you, Susan, I have a few words which I would like to say to her.
Yes, Archdeacon, but I think I can tell Eleanor myself all that needs to be told. We do not want quarrelling and unseemliness in the house.
Susan, I have a duty to perform, and if that duty is not performed, it will weigh very heavily upon my conscience.
What is this duty, Archdeacon?
To do all I can, Eleanor, to help you avert disgrace. To persuade you not to abandon those you have loved. Mr. Slope, Eleanor, is altogether beneath you, and you ought to know that he is. Your father knows it, though he may not choose to tell you as much. Mr. Arabin knows
Mr.
it.
Mr. Arabin? You have spoken with Mr. Arabin about me and Mr. Slope.
Certainly I have, and he is in complete agreement with me. You must dissociate yourself from Mr. Slope before it is too late.
Too late? What do you mean?
You must give up whatever feeling you might have for him, for I tell you now, Eleanor, so that you are in no doubt about the matter, that it is quite impossible for you ever to be received within this house as Mrs. Slope.
Mrs. Slope?
Dearest.
How dare you be so impertinent, Eleanor?
Well, Susan, I think I've made myself understood.
I am not very closely acquainted with Mrs. Bold. Neither do I have the same family interest that the others share. And yet when the Archdeacon told me about her and Mr. Slope, I was sorrowful and ill at ease. Why, when I know her so little? But what I do know of her has been extremely agreeable. I have much appreciated her presence here at Plumstead. She is a fine lady with a fine son, and she is intelligent, too. I think from what I know of her that I would rather she married anyone other than Mr. Slope. From what I know of him.
Well, Papa?
Well, thank you for showing me the letter. It does indeed contain good news about the wardenship.
But you do not like the manner in which the news is given.
Oh, my dear. You know, I have not yet succeeded in having friendly feelings towards Mr. Slope. Perhaps that is my fault, not his.
But why should Dr. Grantly, why should Susan take offence at the letter? Why should they be so outraged by Mr. Slope and by the fact of my acquaintance with him? And why should... You know that they have all been talking about me, do you not, Papa?
Well, yes, I...
Mr. Arabin among them.
Mr. Arabin, yes.
And after dinner, Papa, Dr. Grantly came to Susan's room and... Oh, he is such a hateful man.
Dr. Grantly, no, no.
He is. He is hateful and uncharitable, suspicious of anyone who doesn't worship him.
Eleanor.
Arrogant, monstrously so towards those who dare to hold their own opinions.
The Archdeacon is very eager, my dear, very, very earnest, but he never means to be unkind.
Well, he is unkind, though. Most unkind, whether he means to be or not.
I'm sorry you think so. Just as you are sorry that I cannot admire Mr. Slope.
I wish to leave here. I wish to return home.
Very well, my dear.
A father walks away, goes back across the lawn to the side door. But she does not go with him. She glances down at the letter that she holds. Then she folds it. I wish I could make her face out more clearly. Mrs. Bond to become Mrs. Slope? Impossible. No, not impossible. I wish it were. I wish she did not love that man, anyone but him. He is vile, he is despicable, and she should not love him. If only I had known, if I had realized sooner. Perhaps there was something I could have done to thwart him. At last she moves. So gracefully she moves across the lawn. What could I have done, though, except to win her myself? But I never thought. In truth, the very fact of her possessing such qualities ensured that I entertained no hopes in her regard. She walks towards the door. And now... she is gone from view. And now, too late, I fear I discover that I want her to be my own. I must speak with her. What I will say to her, I do not know, but speak with her I must. You are leaving us?
That is correct, Mr. Arabin. I am returning to Barchester tomorrow.
Your departure will break up the party, I think. A shame. The days spent here have been very pleasant, and pleasant days in general are hard to come by.
If days are less than pleasant, Mr. Arabin, it is because these days people tend to make them so. In my opinion, Mr. Arabin, there is at present very little charity to be found in this world.
Well, charity, they say, should begin at home, and clergymen at least cannot be charitable at the expense of... Forgive me. I'll not spoil your last evening at Plumstead with yet another sermon.
Oh, I shouldn't mind your preaching, Mr. Arabin, if you practiced what you preach.
Why do you say so, Mrs. Bold? What have I done, or not done?
You have spoken falsely about me.
Falsely?
Behind my back, you have spoken falsely and slanderously.
But in what way, Mrs. Bold?
You know that best yourself. You spoke about me with Dr. Grantly.
That is true, yes. He asked me for my advice concerning
your... Concerning my acquaintance with the gentleman who happens to be personally disliked both by you and by the Archdeacon.
Mrs. Bold.
I had failed to indulge against that gentleman the rancor and hatred which you and Dr. Grantly believe is due to all members of the clergy with whom you disagree. And as a result, you took it upon yourself to involve me in your feud with that person.
No!
Doing so in a manner which is most injurious to me as a woman. You decided, or rather you pretended to decide, that I am about to marry him. You got up this story in order to terrify me into joining you in your petty hostilities.
Mrs. Bold, you do me an injustice. What happened was that Dr. Grantly asked me whether, in my opinion, it would be prudent for him to receive you in this house as the wife of Mr. Slope. He asked me, and I told him that, in my opinion...
Thank you, Mr. Arabin. You may spare me your opinion. Whatever that opinion is, you clearly have very little regard for me. I expected better treatment from you, Mr. Arabin. I even expected some charity. I must go now.
And are we therefore to part as enemies?
Oh, I endeavour to avoid enmity where I can. But it would be a hollow pretense were I to say that there can be friendship between us.
Can there not?
No, Mr. Arabin, not after what has passed. People cannot be friends with those they despise.
Am I despised?
I was.
Mrs. Bold.
You must have despised me in order to speak of me as you did. You despised me. You deceived me, too, because you gave me reason to suppose that you held me in some esteem.
Oh, but Mrs. Bold, I do. I do. I esteem you as I have never esteemed any woman. Nor did I intend to speak falsely or slanderously of you. Please, believe that. I have no thought of slander, except if only it could be my privilege to protect you from it. But perhaps...
Yes, Miss Arabin?
Perhaps slander is a lesser crime than sinful adoration. I ought to have been a Romish priest. I would have escaped all this. Mrs. Bold, answer me one question, please. You do not love Mr. Slope, do you? You do not truly intend to be his wife?
Mr. Arabin.
Forgive me, I should not have asked.
No, no, you should not. Nothing can justify your asking such a question, nothing. Goodbye to you, Mr. Arabin.
I have come to wish you good night, my dear.
Well, you may wish me it.
Good night, my dear. I am sorry that...
You are what, Bishop?
I'm sorry that circumstances have caused us to be less convivial than is our wont.
Well, Bishop, I, for my part, have very little at this moment to be convivial about. Do you have much cause for rejoicing?
No, my dear, none.
Oh? I had assumed that you were happy that your chaplain had used you, tricked you, humiliated you, shown excessive insolence towards your wife. But clearly I was wrong. Good night, Bishop.
Perhaps tomorrow, my dear, we might speak further regarding the wardenship and so on.
I think not.
Good night.
Oh, I wish Eleanor had not quarreled with Dr. Grantly. I wish there had not been so many painful words about the matter, or indeed so much distressing silence when there should have been happy discourse. I wish, too, I confess it, that Eleanor did not like Mr. Slope, or perhaps more than like him. She went back to Barchester yesterday, would not let me accompany her, said the quarrel with the Archdeacon was her own and that she had no wish for me to be implicated in it. But I find now that I must travel to Barchester anyway and go with Dr. Grantly to the deanery, for news has reached us that poor Dr. Trefoil, the Dean of Barchester, has been taken ill. Dear Dr. Trefoil, another friend who soon perhaps will be lost to me.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Sir Lambda, Sir Omicron. Well?
Well,
Dr. Philgrave suggested it was a fit of apoplexy.
A simplistic diagnosis.
But one that is not entirely without a grain of truth.
Is there any hope for the dear old dean?
There is always hope.
But since we are medical men, not spiritual advisers...
We would say that there was no realistic hope.
Oh, dear. You were both of you very adept in prolonging the life of my father, the bishop.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Grantly.
Prolonging it, if not beyond hope, then at least beyond my expectation. How long do you suppose will the dean be with us?
A few days.
No more.
So, the deanship will soon be vacant. Who, I wonder, will get the prize? It is a position of great power and authority, sits way above all the prebendaries and canons, even out-tops the archdeacon. The deanery itself is reckoned to be the most comfortable in England. 15 acres of grounds. And as to income, £1,500 is a likely figure, so I understand. All in all, the deanship would be a great and marvellous thing to be had. Why, therefore, should Obadiah Slope not try for it?
Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope. Episode 3.
I feel as if I'm an old man now. I seem to have aged 20 years in a mere few days. At first, when I took my stand against Mrs. Proudie and sought to make it plain to her that I was bishop, not her, that I, not her, would decide who was to become warden of the hospital... At first, I thought it would be quite splendid. But what grave disappointment awaited me. So unused am I to being independent, so ill at ease have I felt, so unnerved by Mrs. Proudie's glowering looks, that I have begun to wonder whether slavery might not be preferable to freedom. I think I will change my mind again about the wardenship
and lead myself back into captivity.
My lord. My lord.
Mr. Slope.
The news this morning, my lord, is that the dean has shown no sign of amendment.
Hasn't he? Poor Dr. Trefoil.
He is not long for this world, I fear.
No, I suppose not.
In view of which, of course, it will be a matter of much moment to your lordship as to who is to succeed him.
Yes, certainly.
It would be most advantageous if a person were appointed who was of your own way of thinking on important points.
Oh, yes.
Whereas, if one of those hostile to us were to become dean, we would have no end of trouble.
Very likely, yes.
Therefore, it might be helpful for you to discuss the matter with the Archbishop when you see him tomorrow. Your wishes regarding a successor, if supported by His Grace, would have exceedingly strong influence, I'm sure.
They might, Slope, they might, but I don't really know whom I should recommend.
Well, I rather doubted whether your lordship would have anyone immediately in your lordship's eye, which is the reason I venture to submit to you an idea to which I have been giving some consideration, namely that the appointment, in the event, that is, of poor Dr. Trefoil's demise, should go to myself.
To
myself. I do not doubt that I can win it, my lord. I should have been the first to make a move. I shall receive assistance from the public press, particularly the Jupiter. And last but not least, I shall have your lordship's assistance. And it is from you, who know best my qualifications for the post, that I would most willingly receive the benefit.
Thank you.
I need not tell you that if I were to be successful, it would be my chief desire to act in accordance with your views in all matters.
Yes.
So, my lord, perhaps you could mention the matter to the Archbishop when you see him tomorrow. Assuring him, of course, as you do so, that because I might expect to get the preferment through other sources, he would not be intervening at all or asking a favour, but simply expressing approval. If you understand me, my lord. My lord?
About the hospital, Slope.
The hospital, my lord?
Yes, the wardenship, you know. It's been a source of great trouble to me, and I might say to Mrs. Proudie, too.
Yes, indeed, my lord, but...
You haven't spoken to Mr. Harding about it, have you, since I saw you last?
No, my lord, I have not. Mr. Harding has been at Plumstead Episcopal.
Yeah, of course, of course. Well, I rather think, upon the whole, that it would be better to let the wardenship go to Mr. Quiverful.
Oh, but my lord...
It has, after all, been promised to him.
Yes, but it was promised
and to... And Mr. Quiverful does have an extremely large and needy family.
Well, that is true enough. Enough, my lord, but I'm very much afraid.
Yes, and I too am very much afraid, Mr. Slope, with regard, I mean, to this business of the deanship. As things stand, Slope, as things stand, I can hold out no sort of hope for you.
No hope, my lord?
None. I may or may not speak to the Archbishop about the matter, but if I do, you cannot depend on any positive endorsement from myself. Not as things stand.
Ah, I see. My lord, it appears to me, on reflection, that you are right about the wardenship. Mr. Quiverful does indeed have strong claims in that regard. I will make out the nomination for your signature.
Yes, Mr. Slope, I think that will be best. Both for Mr. Quiverful and for yourself. For all of us, indeed.
It's called a fête champêtre.
And Miss Thorne, Squire Thorne's sister, has kindly invited us all.
What is it called?
A fête champêtre, Charlotte. It means garden party, but is intended to sound somewhat more exciting.
Well, Ullathorne's a big place. You can't demean your grand estate by calling it a garden. Now, are we all going?
Oh, yes, I think we should. Eleanor Bold will have been given an invitation, I'm sure.
Ah, of course, Mrs. Bold.
You don't seem to have quite made the widow your wife, Bertie, as you promised you would. I trust your ardour isn't cooling.
Heaven forfend, Madeline. I'm as keen on her money as I've always been.
But in truth, Bertie, you've not been wooing her with vigour.
I get on pretty well with her.
You play the jester with her pretty well, but as a suitor you have some little way to go.
As far, perhaps, as Ullathorne and the fête champêtre.
As far as Ullathorne, indeed, and no further.
Charlotte.
Papa is fast losing patience with you, Bertie, and so are your creditors.
I see. So while others are frolicking and capering in the grounds of Ullathorne, my time is to be spent doing business with the widow. Poor Ethelbert, and poor Mrs. Bold. Her fête champêtre will be ruined too.
Do I take it, then, that you have experienced a thorough change of mind?
I have, yes.
Do you now acknowledge, Bishop, that you allowed your judgment to be clouded? That you yielded where you should have stood fast?
Well, Mr. Harding's claim to the wardenship did have much to commend it.
Do you now recognize that Mr. Slope is a cunning, insolent wretch whom you, in your weakness, encouraged to crow and strut? Whom you, in your weakness, permitted to behave with unspeakable incivility towards your wife. You will not allow him to do that again. You will not. Ever.
No.
For the cause of your folly, it is clear, is your excessive unwillingness to detect vices in your fellow men. Your fault, Bishop, is that you are too Christian.
Yes, I'm sorry.
You are what?
I'm sorry.
You see, Bishop, by indulging Mr. Slope, you have done nothing but incite him towards ever greater audacity. Why, only today, the outrageous presumption of the man, only today I was told that he is hoping to become the new Dean of Barchester.
When, that is, the present Dean dies, yes, certainly, I believe he is. Hoping, I mean.
Mr. Slope, Dean of Barchester. Mm. It is the most impudent piece of pretension that I ever heard of in my life. Was anything said about the Dean yesterday?
You mean when I was with the Archbishop?
Mm.
About what in particular, my dear?
About filling the Dean's place?
Filling the Dean's place. When, that is, the Dean dies. No, not much was said.
Was Mr. Slope's name mentioned?
Mr. Slope's name?
Well?
Yes.
Who mentioned it?
I did, my dear.
You did?
Yeah, Mr. Slope asked me if I would mention it. That is, mention it favourably. Very arrogant of the fellow, in my opinion.
You mean to tell me, Bishop, that you are intending to make yourself utterly absurd by lending your name to this lunatic plan?
Well, my dear...
How could Mr. Slope, a man who hardly knows who his own father was, a man whom I rescued when he had no bread for his belly or coat for his back, how could he possibly win your support? Dean of Barchester, indeed. Preposterous! I suppose he'll be looking for a bishopric before too long.
I think what happened, my dear, was that having begun to find that Mr. Slope was objectionable to you, I decided that if he were to become dean and therefore cease to be my chaplain, you might be pleased at such an arrangement.
Pleased? Pleased that this contemptuous creature should be rewarded for his vices. He will indeed cease to be your chaplain. After what has passed, that is a matter of course. He has quarrelled with the clergy, schemed and intrigued, got you into scrapes, misconducted himself in the most disgraceful way with that one-legged Italian woman, and now, it seems, has gone mad with vanity and ambition. Of course he must cease to be your chaplain, my dear. But he shall not become Dean of Barchester in the process.
The poor man.
I am told there is not the slightest hope for him. Did you know the Dean at all well, Mrs. Bold?
Quite well.
It's all very, very sad, is it not?
Not so sad, Mr. Slope, that we're absenting ourselves from Miss Thorne's fête champêtre.
Ah, but Miss Stanhope, may we not celebrate life as much as we bemoan death? I, for my part, have every intention of enjoying today's fun and festivities. And on that account, Mrs. Bold, I find it particularly gratifying that you are also able to attend them.
Indeed, Mrs. Slope?
I am certain that my pleasure would be much diminished if you were not at the party. May I be permitted to tell you, dear lady, how extraordinarily delightful you look today?
Today's event is in your honour, Mr. Arabin, to mark the beginning of what I trust will be a long and happy tenure of St. Ewold's. So you have to enjoy the occasion heartily.
Thank you, Miss Thorne. I'll do my best.
I've arranged, by the way, for a tilting post to be set up in the park.
A tilting post?
Yes, Mr. Arabin. For one to ride one's horse at.
Oh.
With a target and a bag of flour on the swivel.
Ah, well, I shall not be enjoying things that heartily.
Mr. Arabin, you disappoint me.
Good morning.
Oh, now, who have we here?
The Grantleys, I believe.
Oh, yes, indeed. The Grantleys. Oh,
and there's another carriage behind it. Excuse me, Mr. Arabin. I must greet my guest. Miss
And who has the second carriage brought? Miss Stanhope. Mrs. Bold. Such grace she has. And a third person, a fellow in clerical attire. Mr. Slope, no doubt. Well, you knew the worst already, Arabin. Eleanor Bold cares not a straw for you. Her heart is pledged, so you need not think about her any more. Indeed, you were an idiot to think about her in the first place. There she walks. Such grace.
Papa! Papa!
She's gone to greet her father. I love her. I do. Idiot that I am.
Was it a pleasant journey, my dear?
No, Papa, it was not.
Oh.
Mr. Slope was also in the carriage.
Mr. Slope?
Yes, and I very much wished that he had not been. I couldn't avoid having to travel with him, Papa.
I'm sure you couldn't. And I don't know why you should have wished to.
Yes, you do, Papa, you must do. You know what Dr. Grantley said about me and Mr. Slope, what Mr. Arabin said too. Oh, Papa. How hateful this all is. Why did they make up such horrid things? Why did they speak such falsehood?
Well, my dear, you call it falsehood.
Yes, Papa, of course I do. It was entirely without foundation.
Was it, my darling Nell? Was it really? Oh, that is good news.
Oh, Papa.
I can assure you, however, that whatever they said, they believed it to be true.
You knew it was all false, though, did you not, Papa?
My child, I didn't know what to think.
But that is dreadful. That's... So you suspected me, then?
Suspected? I'm not sure what you mean by the word. If you and Mr. Slope were to be married, there would be nothing wrong or disgraceful about it.
Oh, there would be, Papa. It would be utterly wrong. Utterly disgraceful.
Well... I wouldn't have opposed the marriage, but I confess I wouldn't have much welcomed it either. My sweetest Nell, you have taken such a weight off my mind.
Should you not be tilting or jousting, Mr. Arabin, or engaging in some other sport, such as talking with young ladies in shady bowers?
Perhaps, Signora Neroni. Perhaps... You must forgive me. I've discovered that I'm not quite in the garden party mood.
You are not. Shame on you. The festivities are expressly in your honour, and you are the one man who is expressly non-festive.
Yes, I...
Mr. Slope, who was here but 5 minutes ago, was full of life and spirits. Why don't you rival him?
Mr. Slope. Yes, well, I couldn't rival Mr. Slope.
Perhaps not. The two of you oppose apart, at any rate. He is active, you are passive. He craves success and goes about achieving it. You look for success, too, of a different sort. And while you are looking for it, I suspect you will find yourself looking at Mr. Slope, too, and will see him win a wife and a bishopric.
Yes.
So, Mr. Arabin, will you let the Slopes of this world outdistance you? Will you continue to deny that pleasant things are worth the winning? Well, they are there to be had by someone. Why not by you? Is money so contemptible? Is worldly power so worthless? Is feminine beauty such an insignificant trifle?
Oh, do I believe that about feminine beauty?
Well, do you not? Tell me, Mr. Arabin, why were women made beautiful if men are not to look at them?
But men do look at them.
And when you look at women, do you not, as a rule, consider them to be of little worth, not fit to be your companions? Aha! The Widow Bold has come into the room.
Mrs. Bold?
She is with my brother, Bertie. Ooh, and Mr. Slope is there, too.
Oh, yes, I see her now.
And she has already seen you. She was stretching her elegant neck to look at you, but you have disturbed her. Now, what would you say to Mrs. Bold as a companion? A companion, I mean, for life.
Well, I think that...
Well, perhaps I was unfair on you just now. Your looks suggest as much, and by her looks, I should say that she is jealous of me. Why don't you confide in me, Mr. Arabin? If you think Mrs. Bold is a charming woman, if you would wish her to be your companion for life, tell me, and I'll do all in my power to make up the match.
All in your power would be nothing, for I believe that Mrs. Bold is already engaged to another.
I take it, then, that you do indeed find her charming. You would indeed think her a suitable companion for life.
You cross-question me unfairly, Signora.
She is, in your opinion, a woman who might grace the parsonage of St. Ewell's.
She would grace any man's house.
So, this is how you treat me. You know full well that I set up to be a beauty myself, and yet you have the effrontery to tell me that Mrs. Bold is the most beautiful woman you have ever seen.
I did not say that. You are more beautiful than she.
Ah, I thought a moment ago that the widow might be requiring a dose of strychnine from me, but I am satisfied. She is welcome to second place. And now, Mr. Arabin, I must remind you that beautiful and clever as I am, I cannot fetch my own food. Ah. Perhaps you might bring something, both for yourself and for me.
For you, certainly, but I'm not hungry.
Come, come, Mr. Arabin. Don't let love interfere with your appetite. It never does with mine.
I think we should both have a try at the tilting post, Mr. Slope, before the day is out, though not simultaneously, perhaps.
Oh, you must do without me, Mr. Stanhope. I'm afraid my chivalry will have to be seen elsewhere.
Oh. This way, Mr. Arabin. You must be introduced.
Thank you.
Mrs. Bold, of course, you know already.
Mrs. Bold.
Mr. Arabin.
And he knows me, too.
Mr. Stanhope. But this gentleman...
Sir,
I have not had the privilege to...
Well, then, Mr. Arabin, Mr. Snoop.
Ah, we met, as it were, in the columns of the press, but never face to face.
Then I'm sure you'll have a great deal to say to each other. Now, will you all excuse me? I've just seen Mrs. Clamp Tantrum.
Did you address each other often, gentlemen, in the columns of the press?
Well, there was a quite extended exchange of views.
Yes, indeed, concerning the apostolic succession.
Now it seems there are no views left to exchange.
No, I don't think Mr. Arabin and I have yet resolved our differences. But on an occasion such as this, we wisely lay them aside.
Gentlemen, if you will excuse me...
Oh, Mrs. Bold, you're not leaving us.
I'm sorry, I wish to look for a friend of mine.
This is the time. This is the opportunity. And I am well prepared, well fortified. That which hath made them drunk hath made me bold. Dear lady, Dear lady, please, permit me...
Pray don't let me take you from the house.
Oh, no, it's no trouble. She is, I think, angry with me.
Mr. Slope.
And I know why, of course. I have wronged her by being so slow to propose to her. I have tampered with her feelings. Shame on you, Obadiah.
I must beg of you, Mr. Slope. Go back,
oh,
please.
No, no, no. You shall permit me to attend you. I wouldn't dream of allowing you to be here on your own.
But you must, for it is my special wish to be on my own.
No, dear lady, please, do not ask me to leave you. Not until I have spoken the words with which my heart is full and which I am come here to say to you.
I have no idea what you can have to say, Mr. Slope, that you couldn't have said just now in the house.
Oh, there are some things, believe me, that a man cannot well say before a crowd, that perhaps he cannot well say at any time, though he fervently desires to give them utterance.
Mr. Slope.
You see, for some great while now, dear lady, I have nurtured the hope that you and
no,
I...
No, no. Whatever it might be that you hope for nothing, please, as far as I am concerned.
Oh, but I...
Our acquaintance is very slight and will remain so.
Oh, but...
Pray, let that be enough.
Oh, dear lady...
Let it be enough.
Forgive me, but it cannot be enough, since you have rejected my offer before allowing me to make it.
Please, Mr. Slope, there is no need for us to quarrel.
But this is cruel of you. And unchristian, too. Even the very worst of God's creatures must be permitted to hope... What have I done that you should pass on me so severe a sentence?
Mr. Slope, I would ask you to leave me.
Leave you? No.
Then I must leave you.
No, no. Dearest lady, no. No, beautiful woman. Oh, beautiful woman.
Leave me, Mr. Slope.
You cannot pretend to be ignorant of my love for you. Yes, Eleanor, I love you. I adore you. I want you more than anything else, excepting heaven, of course. Oh, Eleanor. Eleanor, how sweet to take the path to heaven with you by my side, each of us guiding the other to travel through this mortal valley, hand in hand, and thereafter dwell together at the foot of the Almighty's throne. Oh, Eleanor.
My name, sir, is Mrs. Bold.
Oh, beloved angel. Be not so cold towards me. See, where our brisk walk has taken us. Here, Eleanor, here in this pleasant shrubbery, I will hold you close to me.
No, and sir, you will not.
You
no.
Want my heart.
You will tell me nothing, Mr. Slope.
Oh.
And in return, I will never, never speak another word for you again.
Oh. She is a woman of cruelty, of wantonness, wickedness. And this, for certain, is a place of wickedness. I should never have come here. By attending this indecent, salacious event, I have sanctioned it, lent it my tacit approval, and in turn I have been debased by it, debased and punished. My cheek is very sore. Oh, there's the bishop. I'll not converse with him. I'll go straight to the house and... Ah, but who is that with him? Dr. Gwynn, surely. The master of Lazarus College and a man of some influence in the matter of ecclesiastical appointments.
And what about the hebdomadal board, Dr. Prowdy?
Ah, yes.
Good afternoon, my lord.
Oh, Slope.
This is all very pleasant, is it not?
Yes, it is. Very. The hebdomadal board, Dr.
Delightful to see so many persons enjoying themselves so thoroughly.
Yes, yes. Yes, indeed. The board, I think...
Dr. Gwynn, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My lord, I would be most obliged if you would introduce me to Dr. Gwynn. The opportunity is too much in my favor to be lost.
Oh, very well.
Dr. Gwynn, this is my present chaplain, Mr. Slope.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Slope.
And I, Dr. Gwynn, am most honored to meet you.
Please excuse me, my lord.
I have, of course, read very many of your exegetical essays, Dr. Gwynn.
My lord, a messenger came with a note from Barchester.
From Barchester?
From the deanery.
Oh, indeed. Well,
Well, my lord?
The dean is dead.
You slapped his face. How wonderful.
Well, it was not wonderful, Charlotte.
Well, of course, I'm very sorry that he upset you. But I'm so glad that you gave him a clout. And Bertie will be thrilled. He was on the point of hanging himself, you know, when he saw you and Mr. Slope going off together.
Charlotte, we did not go off together. He pursued me.
Poor dearest Eleanor. Now listen, it's quite clear that you and Mr. Slope cannot return to Barchester in the same carriage.
You're right. I don't think I could endure that.
Nor, until you do return, can we risk any further aggression from Mr. Slope. So let us put you under the special care of my brother.
Oh, well,
we shall have to find him first, of course. But once we do, he shall be your guardian, and he shall journey back with you to Barchester.
But what about Madeline? Bertie, Mr. Stannard, always has to travel with her.
Well, even Madeline, in an emergency, can be accommodating. Come, we'll search for Bertie.
Sorry news about the dean. My father, you know, had far greater staying power. Did you talk very much with the bishop, Dr. Gwynne?
As much as I could bear.
I don't suppose he said anything of any interest.
He didn't, to be frank.
Did he mention the hospital?
No.
The whole affair of the wardenship has been an absolute outrage, as I'm sure you're aware.
Dr. Grantly.
My father-in-law, Mr. Harding, is being denied a position which is his by right.
Well, perhaps.
I tell you, Dr. Gwynne, I will be forced to wage war.
No, Archdeacon, no. There is no army to fight on your side. Neither you nor I have any power in this matter, and I do believe that it would be bad policy to act as if we had. If the bishop has made up his mind about the wardenship...
You mean, rather, if the bishop's wife has made up her?
Then there is, I fear, little that can be done.
Little?
Nothing.
Good heavens!
Oh, never fear, Archdeacon. Though there won't, I hope, be a war in Barchester. Life won't be without excitement. Well, not for a little while. The post of warden is as good as taken. But there is a new dean to be found...
I'm a little perplexed, Mr. Stanhope. You say Mr. Slope has already made his departure.
Oh, yes. An hour since.
So there is no reason why you cannot travel back with Madeline?
Not really, no. Still, let Charlotte have her own way, as ever.
But what about Madeline?
Oh, I'm sure she can do very well without me. She's going to have to, sooner or later.
Why? What have you got planned? You're not intending to leave Barchester, are you?
I rather think I must.
To pursue your profession, you mean?
Well, yes, if you can call it that.
Oh, I think sculpture is a very fine profession. The finest, apart from painting. And you are, I believe, of equal proficiency in each.
Oh, yes, pretty much so.
Though neither, perhaps, do you overexert yourself.
Well, that's true enough.
Are you determined to leave Barchester?
Well, to tell the truth, Mrs. Bold... I am determined to be guided in this matter by you.
By me?
Yes, Mrs. Bold, wholly by you. You must lead me and set me right, and only you can, and only you should, because the last thing I would wish is that I cause you offence or distress.
I don't understand.
Mrs. Bold, you are aware, I'm certain, how attached to you my sister Charlotte is?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
To tell you the truth, I've never known her to love anyone so warmly on such a short acquaintance. You're aware, too, of course, how well she loves me. It is on account of that love, Mrs. Bowles, that Charlotte has suggested a plan. A scheme, which would help me to be settled in the world should I not be too successful in my profession.
What kind of scheme?
She wants me to marry you.
Well, it seems that Miss Stanhope has been contriving for me a great privilege... But she might have saved herself the trouble. I fear I lack the ambition to take part in her plan.
Pray, don't be angry, Mrs. Bold.
I am not angry. Not with you, at any rate.
But pray, don't be angry with Charlotte, either.
She was so kind to me from the start. I enjoyed her cordiality and her warmth. And now I see the cause of all this kindness.
I'm sure she meant well.
Oh, I'm sure she did. For your family, though, not for me.
She's had a hard game to play. The rest of us depend on her so greatly.
Oh, Mr. Stannard.
I'm sorry. I truly am. I didn't try to deceive you, at any rate.
But why did you agree to the scheme?
Well,
what have you gained by telling me about it? It's quite clear that you and Charlotte are not of one mind on the matter.
No, that's true, we're not. I acknowledge, of course, that I'm in need of paying off my debts and so on. But I would only have been enthused by the notion of marriage if, by some chance, you regarded me as more than a friend.
I never have, though. Never.
No, indeed. Never.
So why have you told me all these things?
Because I don't wish to anger Charlotte. Anger her, I mean, as well as disappoint her.
I see. Your sister wanted me to be her dupe, and now you want me to be your accomplice.
Ah, Mrs. Wilde.
In order to shield you from your sister's wrath, I am to pretend that you have been obedient to her and tried your very best to sacrifice yourself. I was not angry with you, Mr. Stanhope, but I am now, and with more cause, I think, than your sister will ever have.
You are a reprobate, sir. That's what you are.
I suppose I am, really.
Bertie, please.
You are a heartless, thankless, good-for-nothing reprobate.
Yes, indeed. There's no denying it.
I can tolerate no more. I've done with you.
Oh, Papa, you shall not say so.
I shall say so. I do say so.
Papa, please. Bertie is not the only one to blame.
That's true enough. Madeline is not far behind him in degeneracy.
We have made our beds, Papa, and we must lie on them.
Perhaps. But his bed, if he can afford one, shall be elsewhere.
Oh, Papa.
Well, then, when should I leave? Tonight?
Oh, no, not tonight.
Tomorrow, perhaps?
Yes, tomorrow.
Will the 4:30 train be soon enough?
You never proposed to Eleanor at all, did you?
Oh, she understood that she might have me if she wished. But she didn't wish.
And then, I suppose, you betrayed me. You told her that it was all my doing.
Well, yes, sister. It came out somehow.
Oh, Bertie. So that's the end of that alliance.
Yes. And the end, too, of my sojourn in Barchester.
How much is Papa giving you?
£5 a week, which is just enough to starve me.
Will you try to be a sculptor?
Certainly, dear Charlotte. I shall make my own tombstones.
Letitia.
Who was it, my dear?
A man from the Bishop's Palace.
The Palace?
He brought two letters. One is addressed to you, Letitia, and the other to me.
Well, let me have yours, Q, and you shall have mine. Thank you. And we shall see.
Yes, we shall see.
Oh. Quiverful?
Yes, my dear.
You are to be at the palace at 11 tomorrow morning to see Dr. Proudie.
Yes, and you are to be there at the same time, my dear, to see Mrs. Proudie.
Oh! She'd never have sent for me again, Quiverful, if it wasn't all right. If you weren't in very truth to have the wardenship.
My dear Letitia, don't be too certain.
But I am certain. Mrs. Proudie is stiff and stern and as proud as pie crust. But at bottom, she's a decent woman.
Oh, Letty.
Oh, Q. And for heaven's sake, Q, don't let anyone talk you out of it again.
I have paid a few visits of late to the Signora Neroni, spoken at some length with her on each occasion, whereas the last time I saw Mrs. Bold was at Miss Thorne's party. A mere 10 minutes I was with her then, and uncomfortable minutes they were, too. It is very strange, is it not, that I should be dangling around the Signora so much when I am so much in love with Mrs. Bold? Well, the Signora possesses kindness, I think, as well as beauty. And though she likes to tease me by talking of Mr. Slope, more often she delights me by talking of Mrs. Bold. I am very much taken with Signora Neroni, but it is Mrs. Bold. Mrs. Bold I love. Oh, if only I could tell her so.
Well, Archdeacon, your college friend, your paragon of whom you had such hopes, your ecclesiastical knight before whose trusty lance Mr. Slope was to bite the dust, your Mr. Arabin now finds himself caught up in scandal.
Yes, Susan, so I understand.
All of Barchester is talking of Mr. Arabin and the Italian woman. He hardly spent a moment away from her at Miss Thorne's party, and it's said he's visited the Stanhope house any number of times since. Mm-hmm. He's utterly infatuated with her, it seems. A shameful business, Archdeacon. Mm. And one which won't do you much credit, I fear.
No, Susan, I feared it won't.
Of course, if you had been led by me, you would never have put a bachelor into St. Ewell's in the first place. You will have to speak to him. You will have to tell him to desist from doting upon married women and to find himself a wife. A pity he didn't think to find one sooner, before my sister became so well acquainted with Mr. Slope.
Slope, no doubt, is going to marry Eleanor. Slope, no doubt, is going to be appointed Dean of Barchester. Slope is going to become powerful and rich and respectable. And all the while, Mr. Arabin will remain Vicar of St. Ewell's, a man of poor means and extremely dubious reputation.
Excuse me, Your Reverence, ma'am. Mr. Harding has arrived.
Mr. Harding, at this hour?
Yes, Your Reverence.
Thank you. Good evening to you both. You must forgive me.
Papa?
There's nothing the matter, is there, Warden?
I'm not Warden.
I know.
Mr. Quiverful is the Warden.
Yes, Harding.
And it is, I think, a very sensible appointment.
Yes. What has happened, Harding? What is the matter? Has Eleanor gone off with Mr. Slope?
Archdeacon!
No, Archdeacon, she has not.
Has Slope been made Dean?
No, Archdeacon, he has not. But...
But I, what, Harding?
They have offered the position to me.
To you? Good heavens!
Oh, my dear father!
So I thought I had better come round straight away and consult with you.
Consult? What is there to consult about? Oh, my dear Warden. That is, my dear Mr. Dean. I congratulate you. I've never been so happy in my life.
Well, thank you, but you see...
Papa! This is Dr. Gwynne's doing, Archdeacon, you may be sure.
Yes, I suppose it must be. Good old Gwynne.
But my reason for coming to see
you... I'd give £20 to see Slope's face when he hears the news.
Well, Mr. Slope may indeed hear that I have been offered the deanship, and I hope that it becomes generally known that I am greatly gratified.
I should think you are.
And much indebted, of course, to Dr. Gwynne. But all the same, I'm afraid I can't accept the offer.
What?
Papa?
What?
I can't accept it.
Good heavens, why not?
I'm not fit for new duties.
Duties? What duties?
Did you see what the Jupiter said the other day?
The Jupiter.
How a young man was needed in the job?
Yes, and the young man in question was, of course, Mr. Slope. Is that what you want, Harding? For Slope to become Dean? Oh, Harding. All the trouble you gave us over the wardenship, and now this. I do wonder, you know, about your sanity. Harding, you will accept the offer that has been made to you.
No, Archdeacon. No, I will not.
It is very kind of you to come here, Mrs. Bold, particularly after all that has happened.
You wrote in such a strain, Signora, that I couldn't refuse.
Well, I wish to tell you something very important. You may think it indelicate, too, but I am sure that I am right in saying it. You know Mr. Arabin, I believe?
Yes, I am acquainted with him. Slightly, that is.
If you know him at all, then I believe you must like him. Do you like him, Mrs. Bold?
Why is it you ask?
You are cold towards me, Mrs. Bold, and yet I am trying to help you.
Forgive me, I don't wish to be uncivil, but I find your questioning very singular.
Ah, well, I intend to make it more singular still. Answer me this. Do you love Mr. Arabin? Do you love him with all your heart and soul?
Signora,
he loves you, Mrs. Bowles. He has not told me as much, but I know he does. He adores you. He thinks of you and nothing else. He is thinking of you even now as he tries to write next Sunday's sermon. Oh, what would I not give to be loved in such a way, if, that is, I were fit to be loved.
Signora.
He is not like other men, Mrs. Bold. You must not expect him to come to you with vows and pretty presents. With him, yea will stand for yea, and nay for nay. What I tell you is for you to use, or not to use, as you think fit. But if you use it, and I hope you will, I shall, in return, expect you to write to me, and to inform me that the sins of the Stanhope family are forgiven.
Oh, there, little man. There. This young fellow must be growing a tooth.
Yes, Miss Thorne, I think he is. Clever boy, aren't you, John?
You're giving him Daffy's elixir, I suppose.
Daffy's elixir?
You're not? Oh, but he must have Daffy's elixir. He must.
Well, Dr. Rearchild...
Oh, no. Don't listen to him, my dear. Doctors aren't doctors these days. They're jumped-up apothecaries. Daffy's elixir. That's what Johnny wants. I'll get him a bottle tomorrow.
You are very kind, Miss Thorne, very kind. And so very generous in your hospitality, too.
Generous, my dear? I think not. It's all selfishness. I love Ullathorne, but I must have pleasant and entertaining company here. Oh, and by the by, I have invited Mr. Arabin to visit tomorrow.
Mr. Arabin?
Yes. I know that some silly gossip about him has been put abroad, but I like the man. Do you like him at all, my dear?
My lord.
Ah, Slope.
You asked me to see you.
Come in, Mr. Slope.
My lord, if the reason you have called me is at all connected with myself...
Well...
Yes, Mr. Slope, it is very closely connected with yourself.
Then, my lord, I would prefer that no discussion between us should take place in the presence of a third person.
Oh, don't alarm yourself, Mr. Slope. No discussion is necessary. The bishop merely intends to express his own wishes.
That is right, yes. Slope, it grieves me greatly to find fault with a clergyman, particularly a clergyman in your position, but I must tell you, Mr. Slope, that your conduct has fallen very short of what I might have been expected of you.
Why, what have I done amiss, my lord?
What have you done amiss?
My lord...
You dare to ask the bishop what you have done amiss? Does not your conscience tell you that you have disgraced yourself by consorting with a married woman who bears the absurd name of Signora Neroni, and who is altogether unfit for an evangelical clergyman's society?
Unfit, madam? But I first became acquainted with her in your own drawing room.
Yes, and most shamefully you behaved there, fawning on her. Kneeling at her feet, that is, if she has any feet, slobbering over her. A disgrace! I should have insisted on your instant dismissal.
Oh, I have yet to learn, Mrs. Proudie, that you have the power to insist either on my going or my staying.
What? I am not to say who is to frequent my own drawing room. I am not to save my servants and acquaintances from being corrupted by your depravity. Believe me, sir, I do have the power to insist upon your going, and I have no choice but to use it. Have the goodness to understand, sir, that you are no longer the bishop's chaplain. Have the goodness to seek another preferment and other accommodation forthwith.
My lord, may I have from your own lips any decision that you may have come to on this matter?
Certainly, that's a very reasonable request. You will have to leave, Mr. Slope.
Forthwith.
Mrs. Bold.
Mr. Arabin.
Forgive me, I have disturbed your reading.
In truth, you haven't. It is not a very good novel, this. The sunset has been far more appealing. Very lovely, is it not?
Yes.
It's very lovely. Do you like this place?
I do. Very much.
Yes. There is something about old-fashioned mansions that I find especially delightful.
Oh, I like everything old-fashioned, Mr. Arabin. Old-fashioned things are the most honest, I think.
Well, I don't know about that.
Do you not?
Indeed, I don't. But then I fear that I have no firm opinion on nearly all important subjects. It is the bane of my life. Mrs. Bold.
Yes, Mr. Arabin.
I am guilty of a very great offence towards you.
Mr. Arabin.
What I said to you when we were at Plumstead, the question, I mean, that I asked of you about you and it was indelicate on my part. It was unwarranted, improper, and unmanly. And so I must request your pardon.
I took no offence.
Oh, but you did, Mrs. Bold. And you were right to do so. But I hoped that I might be forgiven, and that is the reason why I came in here.
Mr. Arabin.
Well, I will see you at dinner, Mrs. Bold.
No, don't go yet. Not until I have spoken to you. I do forgive you, Mr. Arabin. You know that I forgive you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Bold. Give me your hand. Ah, yes. Yes, I know that you have forgiven me. That much I do know. But there is perhaps... there is yet more to be known. By me. By you.
Mr. Arabin.
If only I could trust myself to say the words. So that I would make you know. So that you would believe me. Oh, Eleanor.
Say no more, Mr. Arabin. There is no need.
Eleanor. Oh, Eleanor. My own.
Yes. Your own.
Is that the lot, sir?
Yes, thank you. Well, then.
Come on!
I am upon the world once more. I am not, it seems, to be the Dean of Barchester. I am not even to be the Bishop's chaplain. Mrs. Proudie has won her fight, her little skirmish. But it was it not, a very small affair? And I'm not wounded. Not scratched. My spirit is unbowed, and I look to the future. There is a woman I know in London, the wife of a sugar refiner. Her home is in Baker Street, and she is much given to the encouragement and entertainment, too, indeed, of young evangelical clergymen. To her, I will repair. I'll be glad to be away from Barchester. I find the air here uncongenial.
So, Eleanor, you give me your news, and then I will give you mine.
Well, Papa. Oh, Papa, I hope you will rejoice at it, for if you don't, it will break my heart.
You are going to be married?
Yes, Papa. Yes, I am. Oh, promise me you will love him, Papa, for my sake.
Dearest Nell, I must love anyone that you love. Come, tell me who it is.
Well, then, it is Mr. Arabin.
Mr. Arabin? Impossible.
Don't say anything against him, Papa.
Against him, my dear child?
It's done now and mustn't be undone. Please, Papa, is he not good and noble and high-minded?
He is, he is. He is everything a good man possibly can be, sweetest Mel, and I shall cherish him and... Now, that is an interesting thought.
What is, Papa? And what is your news that you wanted to tell me?
Oh, my news, Eleanor, concerns the deanship, as indeed does my interesting thought. The position of Dean of Barchester has been offered to me.
Papa!
And I have refused it.
Papa, but why?
Because another man will suit the office better.
Oh, Mr. Harding.
Oh, and Dr. Granger, too.
Arabin, my dear Arabin.
I gather Eleanor has told you.
She has.
It's just as I would have it, Arabin. She is an excellent woman, as is her sister. And, of course, she'll not come to you empty-handed.
No.
You've not been waiting for us long, I trust.
Not at all.
Harding and I took something of a risk inviting you to come to the deanery at this hour, for if our train had been delayed, you might have been sorely inconvenienced.
Oh, you have been away?
We have.
On business, Arabin.
Successful business.
Ah, indeed.
Mr. Arabin, I am so very glad that you are to marry my daughter.
Thank you, Mr. Harding. I am extremely fortunate, far more so than I deserve. You, though, sir, have won your deserts with regard to the deanship, I mean. My heartiest congratulations.
Ah, well...
It was a happy choice.
It was. It was. But I fear, Arabin, that neither of us is destined to be son-in-law to a dean, for Mr. Harding will not agree to the appointment.
He will not? Why?
He pleads old age, the foolish fellow, and won't be persuaded.
Indeed, Arabin, I have been to Oxford with the Archdeacon to tell Dr. Gwynne of my decision. And then we all three of us travelled to London, and some very satisfactory work was done there.
I see. I think I see. So may I ask who is to be Dean?
Ah, yes. That's the question. Harding. You have a letter, I believe?
I do. From the Minister of State.
It is a letter which invites its recipient to become the Dean of Barchester.
It is a letter, Arabin, which is addressed to you.
To me? To me?
Yes, Arabin. To you. You won't refuse the offer, I trust.
I have come back to Hiram's hospital today to introduce Mr. Quiverful to those old men at the hospital who know me. I shook hands with Bunce, dear old Bunce, urged him and the others to be as kind and obedient to their new warden as they ever were to me. Urged Mr. Quiverful, in turn, to have no qualms of conscience about taking on his new position. He has not supplanted me. He has succeeded me, and I wish him well. And his wife, and his 14 children. May he be as happy here as I was. And I pray that Eleanor and Arabin may be happy too. And Susan, of course, and Dr. Grantly. His prospects of happiness are greatly increased, I feel, by Mr. Slope's departure. As for myself, I am, I know, thrice blessed. My lines have fallen in very pleasant places, and for that I give my sincere and humble thanks to God.
Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope was dramatised for radio by Martin Wade. Septimus Harding was played by Alec McCowan. Eleanor by Juliet Aubrey. Slope by Simon Russell Beale. Mrs. Proudie by Rosemary Leach. Dr. Grantley by Stephen Moore. Dr. Proudie by David Horovitch. Madeline by Belinda Lang. And Arabin by Clive Francis. Bertie was played by Michael Cochrane. Charlotte by Patience Tomlinson. Miss Thorne by Margaret Courtney. The Bishop of Barchester by Peter Howell. Dr. Stanhope and Sir Lambda Newnew by Stephen Critchlow. Mr. Quiverful and Sir Omicron Pie by Jonathan Keeble. Mrs. Grantley by Jimmy Bond. Dr. Gwynne by Geoffrey Whitehead. Mrs. Quiverful by Zalema Dean. And the Servant and Cab Driver by Roger May. Barchester Towers was directed by Cherry Cookston.